wrapped inside of a tornado.
You're an Enigma NATO?
Yeah. A mystery Enigma tornado.
Warbands!
This is a super secret entry to episode 9. A little preamble to the Michigan Cup.
Preamble, I like that.
Yeah. Hopefully I used it right.
I mean, I wouldn't be the one to ask.
Yeah, I know you guys didn't even know what electrocute means.
No, we did not.
But let's chat a little bit about our list. You know, the night before the Michigan Cup here, we're getting out early tomorrow. Go playing a 30-man tournament. Pretty excited.
Yeah, for sure. I personally, this is just like me, like real chat for a second about big events like this. I have a really hard time not getting wound up. Like, I don't sleep well beforehand. I think about it too much. I'm tight as hell, like the first full round. So I'm trying really hard to just sort of like be relaxed and like enjoy myself.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just make sure we have fun tomorrow.
That's my like really all I want out of this. I want a good time. We get to hang out with some buddies from, you know, out of town and whatnot. You know, or not out of town
across
per se.
Across town anyway.
Across town, yeah, right. And, you know, do our thing. See what we can do. But I definitely, playing tight, like being tight and then playing tight, generally it does not equate to wins for me. So I know that about myself. So I just have to kind of make sure I keep it under control a little
bit. Just every time you look at your opponent across the table, just picture my warm, smiling face.
Yeah. I'll do that, I guess.
It's like you're playing against your best bro.
Yeah. I really don't want to play you because I don't really like playing against your lists. I'm not a big fan of the idea of playing against the shit you're bringing. You've got some good lists.
Chum. Say that to all the girls.
Yeah, maybe. This might be an instance where the girls don't actually talk to each other, so nobody knows. So, besides us flirting, we're going to talk about some lists a little bit, and we'll give a full rundown of every model in our lists, our two lists for tomorrow, and then we'll probably do a little like kind of pop quiz at each other. I'm going to be like, "Hey, Bill, what are you going to do about this thing?" And he's going to be like, "Yo, Brian, what about this?" And we'll chit chat about things that we don't want to hit or do want to hit. And just try to mentally prepare for some of the things we might run into tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first. Let me get my phone out here and actually get War Room open. Prepared. Do you have your list ready? Because you can just start.
I'm staring at my Rask list right now.
Go.
All right. Well, I was listening to the Friday episode of Muse and got a little wound up listening to them talk about the two casters I'm going to play. I'm playing Rask and Malok, and the lists are pretty damn similar, actually, too. I forget the dude. It's I want to say it was one of the Irish guys, right?
No. His name is Ricard or Richard. I actually don't know, but he goes by Arla Heron on the forums. He's a forums poster on Muse, and he also posts on like Something Awful forums, and he has a really gorgeous Minions army, and he's been like the internet Minions guy forever. He's written like tactical articles when Minions first dropped, he picked him up and he's been playing him since, from is my understanding. And I think Chad ended up playing him in a tournament. So that's kind of how they have some really mutual respect for that guy, and they respect his list quite a bit.
Well, good. Although I'm sure they don't respect mine because neither of them feature triple Gator Man posse. They're only doubles.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a thought process there between running only two or running the full three. I don't think there's per se one is better than the other, although obviously Gator Men are fucking bonkers for their points.
Yep. All right, so my Rask list is Rask, of course, Black-Eyed Rassler, Swamp Whore, and Bull Snapper in the battle group. Two Gator Man Witch Doctors, one for each posse, which I also have two of. I put Totem Hunter and the Bellows crew in there, and I run a full Bog Trog Ambushers unit.
And that's the little nuance that I think you may get some mileage out of against players who are not A, super familiar with minions, or B, just familiar with the way the ambush rule works. Yeah. Which sounds dumb. It sounds like I'm saying like you're just out to hunt noobs, but the reality of it is even players who know ambush is coming sometimes just forget on their first turn.
Yeah, in our warm-up games, I've been reminding my opponent on their first turn that ambushers are coming just so I can get like the normal play.
Yeah,
you know, like,
right.
I'm not gotcha-ing you in a practice game.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Guys are still forgetting it.
Yeah, yeah. Or I mean, even and then if they know, a lot of times it puts pressure where you end up funneling your army down the middle, which is sometimes pretty bad depending on the scenario.
It really does have people funneling their armies down the middle.
Yeah.
But I guess what I really like about them, there's two things. Number one, how it makes my opponent play. You'll see them like fan their armies, so they have stuff facing both sides of the, like literally facing at both sides of the table. And all of it is a lot farther away from the sides of the table than maybe they would normally be, especially on something like Incursion, where you expect people to go wide.
Yeah.
But, you know, when people run, like, flanking units, like, you run the horses. What are they? The gun horses.
Tempest Blazers.
Tempest Blazers. You flank those out to the side often, and then you just, like, show me a horse ass from the side of the table, and I ambush it.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
You routinely ambush horse ass.
Yes. The other thing that I like to do with them is I usually line Rask up kind of hard to one side or the other. You know, if it's a dominatable scenario or something like that, I won't just put him in the middle of the table if I can help it. And I'll line him up to one side and maybe ambush in on that side and then have that buffer of hits.
Yeah.
That some people aren't really into living dangerously like that, but I like to play him really forward and get that awesome fucking gun involved in the game.
Yeah.
I want to shoot something with that gun every turn.
I think that's pretty key. Like, mid to late game, that gun is, it just dominates the battlefield. It's just, it's an Iris gun that never goes away that's boostable to hit with Rat 7. And, I mean, it's such a potent caster-killing weapon. And usually, like, by mid to late game, some of the defensive pieces are gone, or, like, your opponent's caster is sort of like, oh, I'm going to go try to dominate this zone, or I'm going to get out from behind this wall that I've been hiding behind because of, you know, they had to get in the game.
Yeah.
And that's when Rask can swoop in and take him out.
Even behind the wall, he can take him out a lot just with the defense seven, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a coin flip. And then if it fails, you just run a bunch of bog trogs around him, and it makes it pretty hard to assassinate him.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to say about your bog trog tech where you sort of ambush them to that side. So pretty much you just sort of – we were talking about this a while ago like at work, and we sort of equated it to like a – in football, like a read option offense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much just, what's my opponent doing on that side of the table? Are their pants down where like bog trogs might actually ambush effectively? Or if not, then they just run in on that side and then run around. Like plan B, and it's a perfectly fine plan B, is the trogs just go run around and hang out with Rask. And you can just read the table and make that decision. And it's pretty powerful. And man, you know, you look at bog trog stat wise and you're like, God, these guys are garbage. I can just shoot them off the table with anything. Well, when they're like coming in from the side and like, you know, you get to pick the side, they might be caving in the other flank that doesn't have the gun mages or whatever. And you can really kind of protect them from that like low pow shooting. And then they're pretty much just running to engage your stuff and it becomes a huge issue. It's more powerful than it looks on paper. And I think it's a lot more powerful than people give it credit for.
Powerful charge and CMA, man, with reach.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pathfinder.
And even just the power of just the front four of them running to engage some shit, and then the back, you know, rest of the unit clumping up into a good position to go into the support, you know, to charge the choir from behind next turn or whatever. There's some really interesting plays there. So
and Undead Tough.
And Undead Tough, yeah, that's a thing. Assuming you could somehow get it on them.
Well, yeah. All you gotta do is have one of them close enough to that gator.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, for sure. So that list, let me just let's go down the list again one more time.
Rassler, Horror, and Snapper.
And the Horror is kind of just to enable the Rassler to have crazy threat.
He lets me threaten a longer way with him, but more often it seems like I use him to clear a threat range, or I'm sorry, clear a charge lane by pulling something out of the way.
Yeah.
Or, sometimes I use him for the Gator Toss. Although he's not super reliable. He's only strength 10, I think, instead of 12.
So it's a 2-dice 10
against a 1-dice 12, and I've had it lose before.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's a thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Is Fury strength or damage?
Fury is damage, I'm almost sure.
Okay. I
was going to say,
I guess you could Fury him, but that doesn't work.
Yeah.
No, it's also dumb.
It's melee damage.
You want the Rassler Furied.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'm... That's a 7-point heavy, right?
8.
He's 8 for that thing?
Yep.
Yeah, I
was surprised. They said that guy was running double Swamp Horror in one of his lists. I think it was the Malok list, though.
Yeah.
Either way. No, it couldn't have been the Malok list, because he had double Bull Snapper in there.
Huh. Well, I mean, with your list, the way I look at it is... He's sort of like a shitty Titan Gladiator. Like, he hangs out in the back, and he's the late-game piece... And he enables assassinations or enables just longer threat ranges. And then, you know, Rask delivers that, to like an arcane shielded Stormwall. He swings its armor by 6 points in one turn and goes and kills it with one Rassler or a unit of Gatorman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty rough to deal with. Between that and the feat, you know, that Rask feat is pretty potent, man.
Yep.
So, what you want to run down your second list real quick?
And yeah, let's do that before we talk about the pairings and stuff.
Okay.
All right, so my other list is Malok, like I said. It also has a Rassler, has a Bull Snapper in the battle group, and an Ironback Spitter.
Okay.
Double Witch Doctor, double Posse, and Wrong Eye and Snapjaw, and I also have another Bull Snapper on Wrong Eye.
Gotcha.
And that two Bull Snappers on two separate Warlocks lets me really get, like, you know, legit 5 spiny growths out there.
Yeah.
I can really load up that front posse. You know, you put the spiny growths on them, you put Death Pact on them, and engage something, and they're pretty tough, man. 22 engaged.
Yeah, and can't you get them up to 24?
24 somehow? On the feet.
So the feet is plus 2 armor?
Is plus 2 armor. John was saying that, and I was like yelling at my radio on Muse. Yeah, the feet is plus 2 armor for undead models. So,
and then
does the spell make them undead, your witch dot crocs make them undead too.
I see. Okay. And then, so he can basically add plus 4 armor to the entire unit, and then individually you can hand out spiny growths for another plus 2.
And they engage for another plus 2.
So they go from
16 to 24.
Yeah. Plus 8 armor seems all right.
Yeah, it's not the worst.
Yeah. Okay. So, Wrong Eye and Snapjaw, besides the Bull Snapper interaction that you just mentioned, any other particular reason that's in there?
He's a good torpedo. I love just throwing him out there. You know, the same thing that he does in a Rask list. You sort of just, you wait your turn and then you fire him out there. You really put the two dead posses out in front. And just watch them survive and keep regrowing them with Malok.
And then
undead tough Gators are so good.
And then Snapjaw sort of becomes like...
He kind of just lays in the weeds, yeah. Yeah, he just lays in the weeds because you can't trample over that stuff to get to him. It's a lot harder to get to that guy.
Yeah, right. No, I think you get to pick when you engage, and usually your opponent's going to have to throw heavies into those higher armor Gators to get rid of them.
And it's nice to be able to threaten and incorp charge with him too.
Yeah.
But you sort of just submerge your Wrong Eye and your Snapjaw a lot, or maybe throw some spiny growths, depending on how your Gators are laid out.
Well, and that's pretty key anyway, because losing your Wrong Eye is a disaster.
Yeah, it's a disaster. That's not an option.
Yeah.
So he submerges himself every time, and then probably casts one spiny growth, and then Snapjaw will submerge himself, and the other Bull Snapper will spiny growth, and that fills him back up every turn. So for the first 2 or 3 turns of the game, that's probably how it goes with him.
And does he have a transfer after he does that, or is he empty?
No, he's empty. Submerge, I believe, is 2.
So you got to kind of be careful and make sure you block line of sight so you don't get, like... Is Submerge no spells also, or is it just no shooting?
You just can't target it with spells or range attacks.
Okay. It's pretty strong mechanic to not.
And he has to cast it on itself, so Snapjaw can't throw it on him.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
They also don't block line of sight, so you got to be a little careful. Don't like submerge your Snapjaw and then park your your wrong one behind him.
You gotta watch for
that.
Things that don't target, like admonisher type shit.
Yes.
You know? I mean, chain lightning is probably not going to kill wrong eye, but a couple admonisher bounces over two turns might.
He's,
something like that.
He's 17 armor.
Yeah.
He's a real man.
8 wounds or 5?
8.
8. It's pretty solid. All right, so as far as matchups and just like kind of what you think of these lists, do you have a particular matchup you're looking for with either?
I like to think that Malok is the better attrition one for me.
Uh-huh.
Just the regrowing your gators is so fucking good. I can't, I don't want to keep going back to Muse, but like they were saying, it's just bringing that guy back and then having him kill two guys just...
Yeah,
it might not seem as good as it is until you play against it.
That's pretty good.
It's very easy for elite players that, have seen everything to just, write that off by looking at it on paper, and it's so good.
No, I mean, I think Malok is starting to gain traction as like Gators, maybe a lot of people are starting to think he's a nice combination with Rask. That's starting to become a common list pairing.
Yeah, I used to always, whenever I told somebody I was playing Gators, they would just assume it was Barnabas.
Yeah.
And that was even before Rask came out. But
Rask made Gators okay in two lists, basically.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
You don't need to have pigs anymore.
Right. But as far as like factions or casters, when you look at your Malok list, is that built to fight something specific?
It's not. It's just what I think is the second best Gator caster. Mm-hmm. It's not, this is, I built this just to play Krix or anything like that. Although I do feel like it's good and it's better in some matchups than Rask. It's not like I'm playing Rask and then one round I have to play something else, so I'm going to play this. Yeah. I do think he's better than Rask in a few matchups.
What are they?
Particularly really infantry machine, grindy fights.
Yeah.
I think he's probably better just because of the mileage that you get out of all those gators with the regrowing. And they also, if they're in a more pillow fisted army, and I suppose it's a lock in. Most people bring armor cracking now, at least in our local meta, because everybody plays bricks.
Yeah, our meta is very armor stacked. I'm not sure if that's really reflecting the national meta or if it's just our particular group here. But
I guess this is my armor stack. and you can randomly just assassinate people that don't have magic weapons with that incorp feat.
Yeah.
But he's very good against Krix for soul denial, I suppose. And anything that wants living models on the other side of the table.
Well, he's not going to excarnate and bile throw your whole army dead. So
nope, that's nice.
Seems solid against Asphyxius, and you have this giant, picket wall of reach gators out front that really can, so in a Gatsby feat, they're not going to come flying through and murder everything. You've got enough models in the way where you keep your heavies behind them and whatnot. At least that seems to be the way you play it. Those gators sort of range out left and right, and then everything's sort of behind it.
It depends on the scenario, but yeah, it's usually like a 10-man picket fence out there.
Yeah, pretty much. Sometimes you can stack them behind each other and make it even more difficult if the scenario can allow you to.
I think on some of those like more narrow scenarios, or if the terrain allows it, they can pull like a 300 and just put those super plus 8 armor gators out in front.
Yeah, yeah.
And line up another wave of them right behind them.
Yeah, that's a problem for a lot of lists. And then as far as Rask goes, so you've got, I guess what I'm curious is, it sounds like you don't really have this sort of mindset yet, or maybe you just don't feel this way in general about picking lists, but if I throw like a caster name at you, are you going to be able to just be like, Rask?
I have to think about it a little bit, but for the most part, and sometimes the army composition matters, because there's more than one way to build a list, but... Yeah, I mean, if I feel like I have to play an attrition game, like there's no way, if it's an unassassinatable caster, really that's what I look for with Rask, is you know who I am, and it's really hard to resist charging somebody with a Furied Wrestler.
Yeah.
But if I know I'm going to have to grind a game out against maybe a similar army to that Malak list, like a lot of, like, I suppose like a Kador Man of War brick, or maybe a Scorn brick, that I think maybe I can beat him on scenario, then I'll pull Malak out. But if it really has to have, like, if there's like one Colossal as their all their eggs in one basket kind of thing, like, here's this one big hard target, I love throwing a Gator at that with a Wrestler at that with Fury on it and just killing it. So I can't say just maybe one caster. There's probably a few casters I can tell you that it's not happening against for one list or the other.
Well, okay, what about like Saren?
Saren's feat is you can't kill the beast, right?
You can't target her battle group with melee attacks.
Yeah, I think that's probably one that's going to... Just because they're getting that huge attrition boon for a turn of I'm going to charge you, then I'm going to feat, and then I'm going to hit you again.
Yeah.
Just off of that, without looking at her spell card to see if there's any gotcha spells in there that I need to worry about, I would think Malak is my choice. But I'm listening if you want to debate that. Or if there's something I'm missing. What's on her spell card that could maybe affect that choice?
Let me pull her card up real quick.
Just, I like the idea of throwing that survivable wall of Gators in there so that he doesn't charge and kill and then be unkillable and then kill another wave of guys.
Do me a favor and pull up Revive for me off of Malak's card.
Yep. You gotta watch out for stuff like Carnivore with those Gators too.
Yeah.
Or does Carnivore have to be living?
I believe it does.
Well, then never mind.
Hold on a sec, though. I'm looking up something else that's also very pertinent in the Legion matchup.
You want me to read Revive to you?
Yeah.
Return one destroyed friendly faction grunt to play.
All right. So you're in serious trouble against Scythians because they have takedown.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
RFP. So,
yep. So you got to watch out for RFP.
Yep. So you have to look at the Legion list, and a lot of Saren lists have at least a Ravagor, or excuse me, a Scythian, but you may be in a position where they run like double Angel, double Ravagor, or something like that instead. Let me pull her card up again. The reason I picked her specifically is I'm trying to throw you like a hard matchup, because like, you have primarily a melee faction against a caster who's widely known for stomping out melee lists.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Lightbringer, she's got Banishing Ward, that's not a deal. Breathstealer is a model unit, is -2 speed and defense for a turn. That's a pretty good debuff spell. And then she's got Respawn, which is where you kill one of her beasts, it can replace itself within 3 inches and heals a point in each aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a pretty good attrition caster, but her primary shtick, from what I've seen of her list, is that it's usually got a couple angels, and those things fly a zillion inches across the table. They stab you with their armor pierce. They repulse you and knock you out of scenario zones. Then she feats. Then you run into her army and don't do anything. Then she clears the zone again. And at that point, she's way up on scenario and possibly up on points. Her sort of Achilles heel is getting shot in the face. Not her getting shot in the face per se, but her army just sort of getting whittled down by guns. Or control elements that can be like a counter feat. Like you want to make Saren feat first.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. I'm not 100% in love with the idea of the Malak matchup because of the takedown and because of you're gonna just get. I mean, I don't know. Armor 20, you know, high armor Gators, and man, it's hard to say.
Yeah, armor 22 to 24 Gators, especially against armor piercing, is really good.
Well,
cut it in half and then I add 8 to it.
Yeah, so you go down to 8. So they're at -2. So they boost the damage.
You said they're power 14, right?
Yeah.
So it's at. I go from 16 to 8, plus 8 is 16 again.
Yeah, so they're at -2.
Yeah.
So they still kill you on a boosted roll on average. Now, that's just one attack. So they kill a Gator. And then then it goes to regular power 14, and they're probably not doing anything really. But then they repulse and whatever. So I'm not saying I think the angels are not to be too worried about. It's the Scythian Animus that you got to worry about.
And like I said, that the army composition matters a lot more than the casters in a lot of cases.
Yeah. So what about
basically I'm watching out for magic weapons removed from play.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if Rask would be any better in that matchup.
Well, Rask denies long charges on his feet turn.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those things where I think you would have to feet first against Saren, and that's normally not a good play with control feats. But
well, Malak really has the only gun in my two lists, and I've really kind of I don't like that's the case right now. I don't love that Ironback Spitter. He's not amazing.
No, it sucks.
What he does do is have a gun, be kind of hard to remove, and he can two hand throw.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So
I'm not opposed to the idea of taking him out.
Here's the thing about I don't want I'm not trying to talk you into changing lists.
No. I was going to actually bring it up.
I don't see you being able to put anything in that list that's going to fix a problem matchup where you like need more shooting. That's just not Gator's forte. They don't do that. But what I'm talking about to go back to Saren for a second. If you can put her in a position where you out-threat her, which Rask can do, because you've got Gator Toss Shenanigans, you've got Balanced Charge, you have Charging Living Models bonus for the Rassler, and you've got Elasticity, which I believe puts your Rassler up into like the 14 range.
Well, he's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14, yep.
Okay, so if he's at 14, you're probably out-threading a lot of the Legion list, depending on their composition. But even Angels, you're out-threading. By at least a couple inches there. So if you could threaten with that piece early, you might actually force the Saren player into feeding first to not get Alpha Struck. Then they kind of run at you and do what they can, feed on top of it. Then you can feed. The problem with your feet as a control feed in that instance is they just jammed you with heavy war beasts, right? So now those heavy war beasts, they're within five of like all your shit. So like the Rask feet may not do anything at that point. And that's my fear with that matchup. I don't know. I think now the more we talk about it, I think that may be a little bit of a problematic matchup. But I think, I don't know, man, maybe you can angle to remove the Scythian if there is one ASAP. If there's two Scythians, I don't know. Two Scythians, I think maybe you go with Rask. And maybe you do some weird shit, like you picket line the entire list. Like you just, instead of ambushing the Trogs, you just fucking big cloud of Bog Trogs out in front of your army. And make their heavy war beasts have to chew through all that garbage first before they get to the meat of your list.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Maybe if it's that bad of a matchup, maybe it's one of those ones you just got to dodge to win.
Well, that sounds good in theory.
Well, it doesn't sound great, but no, yeah, I want my plan to be don't play that list.
No, I'm just trying to come up with like what if at this point we've acknowledged it's maybe a bad matchup.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
So why don't we just say that? You know, we're obviously not trying to talk about like how to beat it.
Yeah, no.
Like this is you just do this and it works. But how to mitigate that bad? You know, it's like what Jake was talking about. Like you could win bad matchups all day long if you keep your head together and you play well and maybe play some angles that your opponent didn't think about, and maybe vanguarding with the Bog Trogs in that list is the answer. Like you throw the cheap infantry out first, make them deal with it, because if they don't deal with them, Fury Bog Trogs will fuck beasts up. Like, you know, POW 14 charges will kill Legion beasts. So I don't know. Maybe that's a thing. I don't know. I'm spitballing here. But
what about dropping that spitter and putting in full boat of Croak Hunters?
Is that four?
Well, you can put three without getting into tier lists and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then so I have a couple points left over to put something somewhere else.
Yeah.
But they're poison POW 10s, I think.
Well, I mean, I think that may help the Hordes matchup a little bit if you're worried about it.
Yeah.
I think outside of Saren, I if I was you, I would not be exceptionally worried about the Hordes matchup, really. Maybe like Epic Kruger might give you a little bit of trouble, or like a Morvana. Like, I don't know if you want to run your Malak against Morvana.
Yeah, well, that goes back to Carnivore. Does it remove dead models?
So, in regards to, let's talk about Menoth for a minute. Let's talk about like a Menoth, like gunsy list, like a Menoth gunline style, a P-Krios with a shitload of guns, or a Harby with some guns, or you know those Epic Fiora, those sort of lists that we've see a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking at there?
Rask.
Yeah. How come?
Feet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good feeding and shooting.
It really lets me. I mean, we're talking about running the army and feeding Rask, and boundless charging into the mess.
Yeah.
And what I double like about Rask, well, I'm sorry, not Rask, but just my Gators against Enliven is death roll.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super fucking good. I actually think the Rassler in that list is just the terror of all Menoth jacks. They're fucking scared shitless of you with that guy. For sure. Because they're just like, derp-a-derp, we have like 7-inch threat because we're speed 4, you know, vanquishers or whatever. And you're like, that's cool, I'll eat you from like almost double that range away, and Enliven won't matter. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, Morvana's carnivore living models. It's plus 2 against living models when affected model boxes a living model with a melee attack. Box models removed from play. So that's cool, but while I was looking at that, I just, you know, read purification. And that's pretty bad for my Malak list when I'm spamming the crap out of submerge and spiny growth all over the place. Probably pretty bad.
Okay, so that's the first categorical, like, one list doesn't work, period. One list works way better. So purification casters can't be Malak.
Right. Purification can't be Malak, and trolls can't be Malak.
And that's because of the
stone spirit chasing is fucking brutal. It didn't occur to me until I started playing some practice games, and Dryer just purified, or spirit chased, and I just was like, oh, go through the motions, feet, charge through your shit. And he's like, you can't. They can't be incorporeal in this bubble. Oops, I guess I lose.
I'll say this. It doesn't... I think purification turns it into a really bad matchup. I think Spirit Chaser turns it into your feats now just plus 2 armor and run through your own stuff, which sucks, but it's not
even run through your own stuff.
Well, yeah, because you lose
incorporeal. You lose incorporeal in that bubble.
In the bubble, okay.
And so, you know, if it's after turn 2, you're in that bubble.
Okay. Fair point. But what I'm saying is it's not as bad as purification. Purification is like a... Holy shit, don't play that.
No, I feel like both of those are just don't play that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think the Spirit Chaser is that big of a deal. I think if you're playing a super grindy attrition list with like Arm 22 and Arm 24 Gators, just slowly chewing up your opponent's army and you're replacing Gators, you know, yeah, I know you love like going for the kill and charging through everything and killing their caster, but if you're playing that attrition game, that's not necessarily what you have to do to win the game. Defeat might just be a plus 2 armor swing.
Yeah.
Which isn't, that's not a great feat, don't get me wrong. Like it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
But it doesn't suck as bad as purification removing everything.
Yeah.
Every turn, for that matter.
Yep.
You know, against some casters.
It's undoing a lot of work.
Yeah, right. So, okay, well that's good chat. I don't know if we'd really discuss that too much, but purification's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so with Menoth then, it's just Rask, period. Because every Menoth player there will have at least a purification caster out of their pair.
Probably,
that would be my guess. I would probably bet... Well, actually, knowing some of the players that are going there, maybe I wouldn't make that bet, because there's a few guys who play some jankety stuff. But in a normal 30-person event, I would say all the Menoth players would have a purification caster out of their pair.
Yep.
So then you're in the zone of just got to play Rask.
I think so. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Rask is, and Inhospitable Ground. I mean, that is a
Inhospitable Ground's a ball breaker against Menoth a lot of times too.
Legit problem for Menoth.
Yep,
my opinion. So, and also, you know what Menoth doesn't love is Bogtrogs coming out on the side and then like just hounding their support all game.
Yep,
it's really bad. And they're typically their armies are too slow to like. Deal with a threat behind them and then still press the scenario effectively. If your warjacks, like if your vanquisher's turning around, walking 4 inches like laterally, and then shooting its big vanquisher pie plate at Bogtrogs that are like behind you, that's a big tempo swing. Even if he kills a bunch of Bogtrogs, it's like, well, your fucking warjack walked backwards and it's speed 4. So yeah. It's probably out of the game at some point, or, you know, really out of position. So
yeah, Bogtrog's getting into the mess of choir is scary stuff for choir.
Yeah, they're just dead. They all die. It's pretty sweet. Nothing feels as good as killing the choir, because it is just like so many games Menoth players, they just never fucking lose. They might lose a handful of them, but they never lose the whole unit. Rarely is it you get to a point where like the choir is out of the game, not doing anything when the game is still relevant. So.
Yep.
All right, so that's Menoth, and talked a little bit of Legion, I guess.
Talked about Krix a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, let's go back to Krix. We talked about Gaspy 2 a little. What do you think about, you know, like a real dude spammy Krix list? I bet you might see that. You might see like a Venothrax or a P-Scar or something like that.
Yeah, that's very possible to see both of those. But I still think that just the better attrition option is still Maelok.
Yeah.
And especially if they have a bunch of like Bane Knights that don't care about inhospitable ground. That matters a lot, actually.
Yeah, I would rarely bank on inhospitable ground being a huge play in a game against Krix for the most part.
Right.
Because most players who bring Bane Thralls bring Saxon Orc as part of the package, or they bring a Ghostwalk caster. Mm-hmm. And if not, a lot of the units, Raiders Satixis Raiders and Bane Knights, as you said, can ignore it too. So yeah, I think Maelok is the correct play. I also like the fact that you're not giving any X-Carnate targets out there. So if somebody it does drop Gaspy 2, you have some game, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And even on top of that, those Gators don't just auto die to Bile Thrall.
No, they don't, especially not on that list. They kind of don't give a fuck about Bile Thralls.
Right.
The other thing about it is, in that list, Gators don't just auto-die to Bane Knights either.
No.
Like, when you're 24 against melee or 22, they're at dice minus 11 on a fucking charge. Cool. I took 3.
Yep.
Sweet feat turn. You know what I mean? That's not good for them. The other thing about it is, Tartarus aside, which, you know, I'm not sure you're going to get Tartarus out of there, but Def 13 Gators, Def 13 Tough Gators are actually kind of a problem for Mat 6 Krix Infantry to hit.
Yeah.
Obviously not a problem for P-Scar.
No.
Not a problem for P-Scar. I think P-Scar is a worse matchup than Epic Gaspy.
She has Guided Hand, right?
She has... Jesus, I just...
Or not Guided Hand, but the same thing.
Dark Guidance, yeah.
Dark Guidance, that's the one.
It's not quite the same thing. It's just control area additional.
Oh, yeah. It's just way better because it's Krix.
Yeah. It's way better. Yeah. She's got Dark Guidance, and she has incredibly cheap infantry that can blow up Gators. So that particular matchup could be a little problematic.
So Tixis care that those Gators are terrifying, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
So they're going to do a check every single turn of the game, maybe two checks every turn of the game.
Yeah, I think you can swing that for sure. The things I'd be more worried about are things like Canithralls and stuff like that. The super cheap infantry that P-Scar sort of tunes up to, you know, turns them up to 11.
Yeah, but again, I guess they're boosted to hit too. So
careful sort of layer caking of your army, where you're using your melee ranges to really create like nice layers of the, like their infantry just can't get to the majority of your Gators in one turn.
Yeah.
So you're somewhat mitigating the feat. I think that's just a placement matchup where you have to play really well to mitigate the power of their army while you sort of just keep chewing at it.
Yep. Proper placement. You can put just like 4 Gators out in front. They can really screen like your whole army.
Yeah. Yeah. The army's got.
And then, you know, what they kill, you can replace a couple of them.
Yep.
It's not the worst.
No, it's not. I don't love that matchup, but I don't think it's like a complete disaster if you play well. but I definitely think that might be the best. That or like a P-Denny would be probably the two best Krix casters against your Maelok list. But I still don't think I would drop Rask against either of those matchups. I don't know. I don't think it's terrible either. I just don't love it. I never really love bringing like melee infantry to the anti-Krix fight. You know what I mean? never feels good. But I think it's just about patience and grinding, and that's what Melok. Your big struggle playing Melok is going to be being patient, and I think for the most part you are. You've learned to be patient with that list.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that particular matchup you're going to have to be super patient with, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Anything else you know, as far as your list that you've thought about as, I don't know.
No, I think that's a fair coverage, and we've spent some time on it. So let's talk about your list.
All right. Let me grab my War Room here real quick.
You still didn't get War Room open, huh?
I had it open, but I closed it because my phone was dying.
Gotcha.
All right, so my two lists, I'm running a Lord Commander Striker. That's Striker 2. I'm running that, and I'm running a Siege list.
So and Striker 2 and E. Haley, got it.
No.
What? You're going to a tournament? You're not bringing E. Haley?
I'm not. I frankly don't have the practice with her, and I don't know. She just doesn't fit my playstyle. It sounds stupid because she's like really fucking awesome. And I acknowledge that. And I've won a lot of games with her. But I never feel like I'm like, this is how I want to play War Machine. Like, I just doesn't feel optimal to me, which sounds stupid. But it's such a drastic. Just a huge difference from how I sort of envision wanting to play War Machine. And I've talked about this a little before. It's like, I don't generally want to control you too much. I mean, I'll do it. I'll cast some rebukes, you know, things like that. But what I'm really looking to do is to hit. I like killing models really, like, really well. I want my list to say yes to what I want, not no to what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And Siege and Striker 2 both do that extremely well.
That's true.
They fit me pretty well, I think.
All right, give us a rundown.
Striker 2 is got a Squire, an old rowdy, and a lancer in his battle group. And then the rest of the list is a Stormblade Captain, Arlen Strangeways, Runewood, Junior Warcaster, the full Stormblade Boat, which is 11 points of dudes, and the full Sword Knight Boat, which is 8 points of dudes, with a Stormclad marshaled. So pretty much two heavies and a light, two heavies and an arc node, and a bunch of two big melee infantry mobs and a bunch of support.
And the clad is on the Storm.
The Sword Knights.
He's on the Sword Knights.
Yeah.
The Sword Knights aren't the ones with Prano, right?
They are the ones.
They are, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, that's why they're there. and then additionally, the Stormblades power it. So the Stormblades, Arlen,
gotcha.
You know, it's that whole package.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
It basically gets three focus, essentially. And it has a 15-inch threat range. 15-inch threat is sweet, although I don't necessarily just sling it out there. A lot of times it's a second wave, but it's nice to have for sure. And give me a sec. And I'm going to pull my other list here. All right, so Siege has got a Squire and a Stormwall in his battle group. And there's a Journeyman with a Hunter on it. And then there's a handful of solos. We got a Stormsmith, Epic Iris, Reinholdt, Rupert, Ion and Holt, Unit of Rangers, and the full Boom Howlers. And that list is pretty much a tar pit that a big gun line hides behind. And the gun line is, of course, you know, Siege himself, who is just ridiculously potent.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you know, the Stormwall, the Hunter doing their work. So both lists, I guess, both lists crack armor pretty effectively.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, and that's really sort of a reflection of our meta. And my pairing probably. For a Signar pairing, let me just sort of start with that. For a Signar pairing, this pairing might be a little weak to Krix, like a super dude swarm. I think I would drop Siege because of the board control of the Stormwall and the Rangers and Ion and Holt and Ground Pound can thin out infantry. But I don't love it. but that's probably what I would end up going with. I don't think Striker wants to play against Krix so often. You can get a lot of work at a rebuke. I mean, there's a lot of interesting board control stuff he can do. He can lightning storm his own heavies, so non-reach infantry can't kill them. They just mm-hmm. take paladins and die. But it's like one of those bad matchups that you could maybe play your way out of, but it would be pretty fucking hard.
Yeah.
It'd be one of those games where you go in like, oh god, I have to play this perfectly. If I make like one, if I like give away one piece, it's over. So
that's a good tool to have for the popularity of Bane Thralls. And and Mechana Thralls too, for that matter.
Yeah, I agree. Even you know, things like Blood Witches too. There's a lot of non-reach. There's a lot of good stuff that doesn't have reach in Crix.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily see in other factions a lot of non-reach melee infantry, but Crix does run a lot of it. So. But I mean, I would say as far as matchups, the Siege list is probably going to be the drop against the majority of Crix lists, unless they are a weird like Jack Heavy, Morton Ebra sort of thing. Then I would probably drop Striker 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Siege is also custom built to fuck Menoth's face off.
That doesn't sound like something you'd want to do.
Also, you can tell by my pairings that I hate purification because there's barely any upkeeps in either list.
Sarkhan Shield, really, right?
Siege has a couple. He's got the Foxhole, and he's got
Foxhole's on upkeep.
Yeah, he can upkeep. So he can drop it for friendly stuff, and then just keep upkeeping it every turn. It doesn't. You don't see it happen very often, but no. It does happen. What else does he have that's an upkeep here?
God, I love Foxhole. Foxhole is what I love Mage about Sight. Siege.
Mage Sight is the other one. Yeah, that's the other thing about both of these casters. They both have Striker. Geez.
Both have awesome assassinations, in my opinion.
They do, and Signar has such a deep bench of casters, and it's such a deep bench, and it's kind of like Kador, where there's like, oh, that's like their fifth most popular caster, and he just fucked my face. Like, that guy is awesome, right?
You're into face fucking today.
Yeah, it might be.
Right.
So, there's going to be people who don't know what either of them do, or one of them does.
Siege is not that popular. I think that's probably your more gotcha situation.
Probably. I don't know, man. Striker.
You're going to gotcha people with fucking Foxhole if you use it offensively.
Oh, yeah.
That's like really hard to not get. It's not even gotcha. It's like, it's just hard to not have it happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to camp a bunch of fury or focus. I will say that Siege is probably going to see most of his play against War Machine factions, and Striker will see most of his play against Hordes factions.
Yeah.
That's been. I don't necessarily delineate those two like that, but that seems to be the way that the matchups favor. Beast Heavy Hordes has trouble with that Striker list because it hits like a Mack truck. And I've got a bunch of disposable infantry that become ridiculous superheroes, you know, like three dudes kill a heavy. Kind of, it's that kind of situation.
Yeah.
It's sort of like playing Crix a little bit in a lot of ways. And then I have a caster who can just level a game where, let's say things are going poorly and you've got three heavies up in my grill and I've got like Rowdy and Striker left. Well, that might be an even game. Because I'm going to activate and maybe kill a heavy with Striker and kill another heavy with Rowdy. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
So, and that Striker list developed completely because of how sick I was of getting my fun like little PKane infantry sweeper lists just crushed by armor.
Yeah.
It was just like me just spitting rain at everybody and it just bouncing off. Because our meta is at least fairly armor heavy for the most part. I mean, there's a few dudes who run infantry lists, but I just generally find that there's enough tools in either of these lists that's not a big deal.
Mage Sight takes care of the stealth battle group problems that I would picture.
Right? Yes and no.
No,
I still wouldn't run Siege probably against Epic Lilith.
Well, I mean, if you know they're going to play Epic Lilith, or if Epic Lilith's even in their pairing,
it's some list chicken probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, are you just benching him for sure? Like, round one, Epic Lilith and Veil 2.
Well, that's the thing. It just depends on their second list. If their second list is Saren, then I got a problem. Because that Saren is Saren against Epic Striker is not great.
Yeah.
And then, like, really not great. Like, bad for me.
Right.
And then Lilith 2, I think either list can be okay against, but not...
Well, then you got to take Siege, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and then I got to use Mage Sight. But
we talked it out. Go us.
Yeah, I guess. It depends on the other matchup.
Well, you're right. That one matchup is just, you're going to fucking lose. Whereas Mage Slayer at least mitigates the bad part of the Saren, or the Lilith matchup.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Stryker may be pretty good against Lilith because she does have access to the Naga, but probably can't hand out enough Naga Animus to thin out all of my infantry and kill both heavies before I'm like completely screaming across the table.
Yeah, and Legion in general is usually pretty low model count, and you have a lot of models in that list and a high volume of attacks.
Yeah.
No, what's she going to have, like, one unit of swordsmen or something as a screen?
If that,
or maybe even just like striders or something.
Yeah, a lot of times you see like striders or you see the
reindeer.
You see the reindeer, yeah. The reindeer are actually hit pretty fucking hard, though.
Yeah, they hit hard, but it's disposable infantry. They don't hit your warjacks hard. They got poisoned.
Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah, but the infantry can't all die before I get there, so I don't know. I haven't played that matchup. I'm not in love with it either way.
You think Jake's going to play his WTC list?
I have no idea what Jake's going to play.
That fucking asshole.
My guess
is... Be more predictable, you dick!
My guess is that in a serious business tournament like this, he probably will play Saren Vale too. I've been thinking about both of those a lot. So if I hit something else, that's fine. But Vale 2, I think either of my lists will work against okay. I think the Siege list can shoot her heavies off the table pretty reliably. And I think the Striker list can make a really good scenario push, which is kind of what last game I played against Marshall. There was definitely a scenario push that was happening. It didn't quite work out in my favor, but it was a good practice game to at least see sort of what that matchup would kind of look like. Neither of us played very well, but it was something. It gave me like that's what this would look like on a table, and I had a hard time sort of visualizing Vale 2 versus Striker 2. So that was a thing. But yeah. Outside of Legion, let's like not obsess too much over Jake here.
Right.
Siege, Houses Menoth, super bad.
Good.
Which I love.
Uh-huh.
If you purify to get rid of my Arcane Shield off my Stormwall, more than likely, I'm not super concerned about that. There's going to be a lot of instances where the Stormwall doesn't even tow zones because I've got Boomhowlers. And the Boomhowlers may actually just be out in front. That lets Stormwall just activate, just do its thing. Ion and Holted, Stormwall, you know, putting boosted POW 15s into Menoth Jacks, even through Passage. Siege himself can Explosivo both shots from Rupert, so he's got two boosted POW 14s. I've got a Hunter that I can also cast Explosivo on. So, I mean, that's three.
You said from Rupert. Did you mean from Speculator?
Sorry. Reinhold.
Yeah, Reinhold.
Like that. I mix those two names up all the time. That's cool. Yeah. Gobber Speculator, yeah.
Cool.
So there's some stuff there, for sure. It's been pretty potent. It's nice to just be like, oh, that Menoth battle engine, I'm just going to kill it in like two shots. Or that heavy over there, I'm going to remove that. You know, I can reliably remove two Menoth heavies on a feat turn.
That's a good thing to be able to do reliably.
Yeah, it's pretty all right. Ground Pound is super good against clumped up things like Bastions as well. Of course, there's always the option of just shooting their caster in the face.
Right. Who are you taking against Circle? You know, let's say it's Kruger Morvana. Kruger 2 Morvana. So you got Stormwall on the table.
Kruger 2 is my boogeyman.
Yeah.
I do not love the matchup against either of these lists. I think it might be the worst caster in the game for these two pairings because he shuts down the shooting gallery pretty badly. And his feat is such a kick in the dick to the Striker list.
Yep.
If I would probably drop Striker, and I would just have to give you like half of my army to make sure I don't lose on scenario, and then hopefully the second half of my army can beat up the rest of Kruger's army. Having a lot of lightning immune infantry is good against either Kruger, so that's kind of a boon. And then you know if you see those Woldrath builds where the Woldrath's trying to just kind of hang in the back and shoot your heavies with boosted POW 15s, the Stormclad's immune to lightning, so that's a good thing too.
Do both your lists have Stormwall or just the Siege?
Just Siege.
That's the only you can't move that Stormwall with his feet. That's pretty good for the anti-scenario loss, depending on the scenario.
It sounds good in theory if you're towing a zone with a Stormwall. a lot of times you've put it into like both warp wolf stalker ranges. You know what I mean?
Well, if you're towing the zone or maybe not even towing the zone, but you have a cloud of booms in front of it, it can't move, so the booms can't move past it, and you start getting like the daisy chain of bumping into each other to at least keep something in the zone.
Yeah, for sure. No, you definitely can keep. It's pretty easy to keep some boom howlers in the zone.
Either way, it's your Alamo for that. You know, it's the thing that's not moving.
The problem is, I can't fucking shoot anything.
That's true.
And that's a huge problem. And I don't have any like my Stormwall on that list. I mean, God forbid it punches you on the feet turn, but it doesn't have any threat extension. I can't like peace trade. You know, it's like, oh, here's a warp wolf. Come get it. It's like, oh, cool. All right, I'll go kill that warp wolf.
Well, you can still ground pound through the feet, right? Or not through the feet, through Stormwall.
No.
Ground pound doesn't work?
You put it in the range of your weapon.
Oh.
So my understanding is no. I would have to look it up, but I don't think so. So it's not good.
No.
It's not good. It means Stormwall guns shoot 9. Siege gun shoots 9. Hunter gun shoots 10. No, 9, because it's minus 5 inches.
Yeah.
So it's not good. So I just play Striker 2 and, try to power through. Yeah, but that's my boogeyman.
Is Striker 2 better or worse than Siege against Morvana or other popular, you know, Balder?
I would play Siege against Morvana.
If you knew you were going to play against Morvana, but...
Yeah.
If it's those two in round one, you got to play the not terrible matchup and play the Striker no matter what. Are you just going to try and roll the dice?
Hard to say. I would have to look at their list comp, and I'd have to see if maybe I knew anything about the player and sort of their tendencies. If I thought it was somebody, I mean, this sounds kind of like a dick thing to say, but if I thought it was somebody who maybe is not as fluent with Kruger 2 as they could be, where they might not see how brutal of a matchup it is and take full advantage, maybe I would drop Siege, but more than likely it would probably just be Striker 2.
Yeah.
What you're hoping for, though, is Morvana plus like a Chromac or something else like that. So,
fair enough.
Yeah, but I definitely think Siege threatens her so badly with guns that it's kind of like the Harvey matchup where she really doesn't want to be like doing as many of her funsies shenanigans with all the bullshit rerolls and whatnot. And they don't circle outside of the trees, which I will kill super dead as early as possible.
Yep.
They don't have any entropic force or any way to remove tough. So they're actually going to struggle against the Boomhowlers a little bit.
Yep.
And not get a lot of carnivore. Like, she's not going to get much health back from my list, ideally. So.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, I feel semi-comfortable with that one. I mean, it is Epic Morvana.
Yeah, but she's still good.
Yeah, I'm not super worried about purification. I'm not going to give you my Stormwall. I'm going to grind out all your infantry, hopefully, and you're going to have to work your way through a lot of Boomhowlers to get to anything important.
Any other boogeymen out there? I think those are the more interesting ones to talk about. Oh, face roll this bitch, and then, you know, it's cool, but what are the ones that like really take some thought about what you're going to have to deal with?
I
know how you need to play against all your, you know, your bricky scorn lists and trolls. I think both of your lists are pretty good matchups against trolls.
Depends on the list.
Yeah, like Madrak Brick or like
when you say Madrak, do you mean P Madrak Beast Brick?
Yes. Which runs rampant in our meta.
I actually don't dislike either of my lists against.
No, them. I like Siege against that list a lot.
Yeah, he can really pick apart the support. And then Boomhowlers are a problem to cut through on the feet.
Yep.
And then the Striker list can just flat out kill the heavies. You just got to get them to crack the brick first.
The thing I don't like about the Striker list is you give them, it's like you're giving them like a bowl of Cheerios to eat through with their Crusher.
Yeah, I agree. And I used to have Rupert in that, I used to have Rupert in that list for tough, which would have helped, but I don't anymore. So I think you're right. I think it's probably Siege. Against like a Madrak 2 list with more of like an infantry bend or like just let's just say like an infantry heavy list.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's super gunsy, I think either list works fine, but I still might lean towards Siege.
Really? I would think you'd lean towards Striker with just the volume of attacks.
Yeah,
you know, for like a Kalandra, or not a Kalandra, a Gristle or Madrick 2 or Jarl.
I played the Gristle matchup, and it was just a lot of rebukes and cacophonies being thrown around, and nobody was charging anything. But what I would say about that matchup is Fenblades outthreat my melee infantry really badly. And I've had trouble with where, like, I had the same problem with Marshall and the White Legionnaires.
Mm-hmm.
Reasonably fast reach infantry with Vengeance. My list doesn't have enough range attacks to, like, take that unit off the table.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I peck at them, and then they're, like, they're charging me. Or I don't peck at them, and then they're charging me. Because more than likely I've entered their threat, or I'm close.
Yeah.
I have to be really careful with, like, Nihilators, Doom Reavers, those, like, kind of nasty sort of front wave reach infantry that can cause a lot of damage to other infantry. Fenblades, I just got to be careful with that stuff. So I just, if I can land the early rebuke, it really helps. Obviously, that doesn't work on Doom Reavers and shit like that, or, you know, models with stealth.
But, mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more, I still think I like Siege against that list. I still think Siege would do really well against Epic Madrek, because I'm not going to give you, you're not going to get something like Digmies on my Stormwall. Like, I think I can keep that from happening. So.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe not. I feel comfortable either way. You can tell I've played against a lot of armor skew, because both of my lists I feel comfortable with, and typically that is not like the Signar answer to, like, how do you feel about trolls? It's usually like, ugh.
Yeah, you have like battered Brian syndrome for armorless.
Right. Yeah. I've just tuned against it so hard now that I'm not worried about them. And then of course what I'll end up playing against is like four fucking infantry swarms in a row tomorrow.
Yeah.
But,
are there any other matchups that you want to talk about in particular? I got one more thing I want to talk about in the pre-tournament portion of this podcast, but
I guess maybe we can talk about Asphyxius too a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
My gut feeling is that I can't play Striker because A, it's Krix, and B, Excarnate exists.
Mm-hmm.
I could theoretically give away the Lancer to put a rebuke on the Bile Thralls early, and then later hopefully they're in range where maybe Striker can land it himself, or hopefully the Lancer doesn't die, which is hoping a lot. But maybe Striker just runs the Lancer out. Like, pulls from Squire, runs the Lancer, and then just rebukes three times and hopes he can hit low defense Krix infantry with all three. And then you've got, you know, I've got Bane Knights that can't charge me. I got Bane Thralls, theoretically, if I could somehow get through the stealth to get to him. And I've got Bile Thralls that can't purge. But man, that's a nightmare, is playing that matchup, in my opinion. I've never played it with Striker 2, but.
It sounds bad. And frankly, it doesn't sound a lot better for Siege.
Well, the thing about Siege is he's such a threat to just kill fucking Asphyxius.
Is he? Like, behind clouds?
Yeah, man. Fucking Mage Sight.
Mage Sight ignores clouds? No, fuck it. Never mind. Take Siege.
Yeah.
Yeah. Foxhole shenanigans and Mage Sight. Whatever you gotta do, and just shoot Asphyxius in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, you have to play... You gotta play Siege sort of aggressively forward. Yeah,
well, I feel like that's a matchup that if you sit around and play timidly with either of those lists, you're going to lose.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is Boomhauers are a problem for Excarnate. And obviously they're going to have Blood Witches, but Siege kind of excels at just killing the Hag.
Yep.
Because as soon as the Hag is even sort of in range, he's dropping a Mage Sight on it and something's shooting her in the face.
I really like the idea of you have the tools to just go up there and kill Gatsby before he fucks around and you kill half his army, he feeds it back and all that crap.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting against a good Gatsby player for that to happen, but the threat of it happening is going to make them keep Asphyxius out of the game way more than typical. Like, he may not ever cast an Excarnate, or he may never drop a bunch of clouds or you know, whatever. So if you can keep him from using that ridiculously powerful spell list, you know, the trick is can't give him Stormwall, and you got to get that Blood Hag out of there ASAP. So she only runs 10 though, and a lot of Krix players fuck that up. I've seen her run 14 more times than I can count. She runs 10, So if I see her run 14, I'm going to be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
So, and because she only runs 10, that entropic aura is not quite as long of a threat as it could be, and that and sometimes that can be a factor.
Yeah, that's a good thing to know.
Yeah, the turn before she really would do the business and all my Boomhauers would evaporate, that would be the turn that I got to get her.
Yep.
I might have to give up something important to get her, but it's kind of a big deal.
Yep.
Because with the Boomhauers, I'm functionally immune to the feet. Immune to assassination by the feet. And
yeah.
More than likely, Stormwall can be mostly immune from the feet as well.
I agree.
So yeah, I don't know. I think that's my list. It's kind of taking an aggressive stance against a caster who is like considered like one of the most frightening casters to sort of play against in the game. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I want an Asphyxius player to be like, looking at my list and doing the math in their head about like what's going to happen on the table and then kind of be concerned.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Cool. So the only other thing I wanted to talk about before we sign off for the night, get ready to go to the tournament tomorrow. And then, you know, I think we're planning on reflecting on the tournament afterward.
Yep.
As a second part of this podcast, is things I want to make sure I don't fuck up tomorrow. Some like final thoughts that I want to have in my head before I go, of things that I've learned while I was playing, you know, like some warm up games for this, and I want you to suggest anything that you've seen me fuck up, things that, you know, like a mental checklist at the top of my turn of things to do so that I can succeed. And I think I'm going to start doing this before tournaments when I know ahead of time and I've got a couple weeks to prepare for a tournament and I know I pounded out my list, and it's not like a game day decision or anything like that. Yeah. I think I want to start doing this.
Okay, I think that's a good idea.
The biggest thing that I've noticed myself that it's burned me time and time again is I'm pretty sure that those Witch Dot Gators need to activate very first thing on my turn. And if they're going to do the same routine of Undead Tough, they got to do it ahead of time. So many times I've gotten fucked on something because those Gators were alive when they could be or should be dead.
Is the range on that 3 inches?
No, it's five.
Okay. It feels like that shouldn't be that big of a deal, but I guess the Gators, as they run and then the Witch Doc walks and then they run and then the Witch Doc, whoop, I'm out of range. Is that kind of what's happening?
No. What's happening is I charge a goddamn Reckoner and it's like, oh, Ashen Veil, your living guys get -2 or whatever.
Right. But what I'm saying is like they're... You just didn't act like so. You were in range for the Witch Doc. It just
yeah. I just didn't do it first. It needs to be. I'm trying to think of. There's some other things where being alive totally boned me when there's just no reason for it. It's just I didn't do it in the right order.
Well, let's talk about table placement here for a second.
Well, go ahead.
What I was going to say was, if your Witch Docs are behind your Gators, mm-hmm. then you've kind of created a little bit of an order of activation problem there.
Well, so, there's a difference between being behind him and being behind like a solid brick that he can't wade into.
What I was going to sort of suggest was keeping them, because you sort of have one for each unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep them if there's sort of a narrow lane down the center of the table where like support solos should live.
Mm-hmm.
Keep them in that, but not directly behind the Gatorman units. So then if they do need to activate first, they can still make a full 5-inch walk forward, or whatever their speed is. I assume their speed 5,
mm-hmm.
and then do Undead Tough. So then what you don't want to do is create a situation where Gators, Witch Doc directly behind them. Witch Doc activates first, can't move, gives them Undead Tough. They go do their thing. Now they're really far apart.
Yeah.
And potentially you have an issue where that Witch Doc Croc maybe doesn't get to them next turn.
Yep. I totally agree.
So... I mean, maybe not. It's a 10-inch threat probably, or 10-inch charge with them a lot of times, and then he's got a 5-inch walk and a 5-inch undead tough. But it's just, you don't want to put yourself in that spot, I guess is what I'm saying. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I like the idea of either keeping them way out wide, like on the outside of the unit, so they can run sort of walk past the unit, make them undead tough, then let the unit activate.
Yeah.
But I like better keeping them in the center line. I think almost all support solos should live... Like your Ruperts, your Roomwoods, your Kovnik Joes, they should all live, Saxon Auric, in that middle 1 foot lane of the table.
Yeah, I agree.
So maybe push them in a little further to that when you set up.
Yeah, they generally are there anyway. It's just them, and we're talking about turns where, you know, Gators are advancing 2 inches and hitting the next wave of stuff or whatever. Yeah. But yeah. just not having the tough has burned me, and being not undead has burned me countless times. And that's the one thing I really need to start getting into the habit of doing with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, it just should be part, like, the first thing every turn. I mean, just
and proper thing. Selection of what chant to do with the Gators.
I mean, there's that, I think, comes from experience, probably. Yep. But at least, as long as you're remembering to chant, I mean, you can kibitz your game later and be like, oh, I should have done plus one defense there instead of rerolls or whatever. Like, you can think about that later in the game. But it's not as big of a disaster as, whoops, they're not undead.
Yeah.
So now they don't benefit from the feat. Now they get, you know, Reckoner or whatever's, you know. I think that's a bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a similar issue with Siege. Is there's a lot of Siege. I've said this a couple times on the podcast. I love Siege. Siege, there's two things that can really hurt Siege, and they're both self-inflicted. One is in your control and one isn't. The one that is not in your control is that you roll like shit on his feat turn. Like, oh, cool, I hit a Reckoner with this, you know, Stormwall gun. It is dice plus 5 and I'm boosting. Awesome. Its expected value is 15 or 16 damage. And then you roll like 1-1-2 and you're like, oh my god, kill me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if that happens a couple times on the Siege feat turn, it basically is like you didn't feat and it's the worst. Because you're losing a ton of potential damage.
Yep.
So that's a problem, but you can't really mitigate that. You got to live with it. You hope it at least evens out to average. The issue you can control is things like activate Siege, walk him forward, feat. Oops, I walked out of Squire's control area. My feet's only 12 inches now. A lot of times, Siege is the first shot. He is the feat turn shot. I'll be like, Siege walks up, catches two heavies, boosted Pal 14 into one, boosted Pal 14 into the other, you know, Explosivo if I need, or, you know, if I need it, if it's like a Menoth Jack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Walking away from that Squire like a dipshit has cost me a couple of really, recently has cost me a couple, a lot of potential damage on my feet turn.
Yep. And remember to Reinhold before you do it too.
That's exactly what I was going to say. The other thing is Reinhold. So it pretty much every turn is, I have to look at the table and be like, where is Siege going to go this turn and is he going to feat before I just activate anything, before I hand out focus? And then if the answer is yes, then okay, the first two things that activate is Reinhold walks up and reloads, making sure to not block Siege in some way. And then the Squire has to get at least sort of close to where Siege will end up.
Yep.
And then go from there. I mean, the feat is not a pulse. It is an aura. So if you fuck up, and you're like, oh, damn, that guy's out of the feat. Well,
you just got to shoot some closer stuff with Siege and then use the rest of your army after you activate Squire.
There is, you can mitigate it to some extent, but like in the last game, what happened was there was like a Beast 09 and a Behemoth, and my Stormwall was black oiled, so that guy wasn't shooting. But I was like, it felt like the right turn to feat, and it was the right turn to feat, except I forgot the Squire, and it was Siege's gun who was going to be like, dice plus 4 on this heavy. Dice, and then I think Behemoth was down to armor 19 because I harmed him, so it would have been dice plus 5 on that guy. Two huge hits to take big chunks out of both of them, and it didn't happen. It only happened to one of them. So that was something I reminded when you started talking about that order of activations issue. I was like, oh yeah, I've got the same thing.
Yeah. And one more thing that I see you like facepalm yourself over a lot is your pods, man. You never drop your pod, and you always get so mad at yourself. And those things, there's a lot of mileage to have out of those guys. Maybe you should put those things on your base or something. Oh, shit, do you need me to bring pods tomorrow?
No. No, I've got pods in my bag. I mean, if you want to bring me painted ones, that'd be cool, but it's not.
Yeah, I know they're not in my bag. I didn't grab them.
Don't worry about it. I got them in my bag. All
right, cool.
Yeah, the pod is pretty goddamn amazing.
But I'm trying to think of other things that have boned me. When you decide to do a Gator toss, the order of activations gets pretty crazy. Because you got to rise him and then elasticity him, and it's a pain.
Yeah, no, you got to really think that through. That's probably your extension, even though it's only really to activate one model. You got to do like 7 things before you activate it. So this is funny, actually, because I was just thinking about this when you mentioned pods, and I was thinking about this the other day. I watched the Iron Gauntlet final with the dude from Chain Attack Jay, mm-hmm. playing Siege with Stormwall. So this is sort of a pertinent story, I guess. And his list is somewhat similar to mine. Both have Boomhauers and Stormwall in it, at least. And during the commentary, DC was like, you know, while the Stormwall's activating and like punching shit, DC's like, all right, is he going to use the pod now, or is he going to wait till after his attacks? What, you know, when you use the pod is really important. And I'm like thinking to myself, like, dude, you can only use the pod after you move. But I just read the card, and this is like a weird revelation to have over a podcast that's going to make me look dumb. Here's the way it's worded. Once per activation, after its normal movement, this model can place one lightning pod anywhere completely within 10 inches of this model, blah, 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 blah. At the time it's placed, you draw the line. So once per activation, after its normal movement, comma. Yeah. So is that saying after you move, you drop the pod?
I think all it's saying is you can't drop the pod, shock, move, do attacks.
Wow. I've been doing it. I've always done it at just, okay, I moved. Movement's over. Pod. Now I shoot guns, punch, whatever.
Yeah.
I can't believe – I mean, if that's the way that's – I mean, it must be. That's the way it's worded. That's – what you just said is rules as written, to me at least.
That's what I think it is. I've never read the card before. But, and, you know, I've always taken your word for it when you do it. And, you know, when we're practicing and you forget your pod and you're like, oh, I forgot. I'm like, do it. And you're like, no, it's fine. And you maybe like punched or shot one gun. And you're like, no, I want to do it right, and don't do it. And you've been screwing yourself all this time, man.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, if DC was saying it, I'm assuming it's right.
Well, I mean, you know, to be fair, there's been some commentary with some of the privateer guys where they've messed up rules occasionally. It does happen. I would imagine a guy like DC who is constantly buried deep in stuff that isn't even out yet and had to go through all the playtest and all that may occasionally mess up a rule because he probably has like four different revisions.
Yeah, in his head, thing's probably been written three different ways.
Yeah, right. So I'll look it up on the privateer forums. I think you're right, though. And that's a really amazing thing because I almost never forget the pod.
Yeah, you just always forget to do it before you start attacking.
Yeah, I'll like walk up and punch and be like, God damn it, the pod. Well, I guess that's not a thing. So
yeah.
So it's like a Stormwall buff for me. Which is, you know, pretty hilarious.
If you're worried about it, bounce it off the TO tomorrow and make sure that he agrees. So if it comes up,
well, I'll check in on the privateer forums. But I mean, it sounds now that you've said that, and I just read the card, it sounds cut and dry. So anyway, all right, well, establishing ourselves once again as the noob cast.
every podcast fucks up rules sometimes.
And at least I'm fucking it up to my detriment. I'm not like, oh, I want to punch games this way. I will say there was a rule I was fucking up recently for probably four or five games with the Stormblade Captain. I thought he had Assault. He doesn't have Assault. He has Quick Work.
Nice.
So I was just like, oh, Assault Shot, punch you with my giant sword. This guy's awesome.
Well, it's not like you kept incorporeal for a fucking round with Malak.
Oh, dear God. This is like confessional time. This is where
I can cut it out, so...
everybody who's experienced who listens to our podcast is now just like rolling their eyes and slapping their forehead and then just like deleting. Yeah. Like, you know, on the iPod, you swipe to the right and then that little delete icon comes up.
Yeah.
Just happened. Yeah. No, fuck it. I'm super excited about tomorrow. And
me too, buddy.
This is a good chat. I feel like we need to go to more events together. I mean, we do go to a lot of events together, but like we need to make this a habit. This like an hour or two the night before. Just talk about our lists, and so
yeah,
maybe one of us hit something that the other person didn't think of. So
yeah, well, that happened already today on this.
Yeah,
so that's good. All right, sure. Well, you want to call it a night? Go get some sleep, and I'll see you in the morning.
We're going to do the most important thing you can do before any tournament, and that's go to bed fucking early. All right, so maybe we will. Have a podcast glued to the end of this podcast. We're going to try to record after the event. If that doesn't work out for whatever reason, we will discuss the Michigan Cup on the next one. But
insert some battling music.
Yeah.
Where you guys can imagine us rolling dice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear what you come up with for that.
Oh, shit. Have I ever failed? All right, so after a nice interlude and a week's vacation for personal reasons, we're back after the Michigan Cup.
Has it been a week?
Yeah, we missed last week.
You mean like we didn't drop a podcast last week?
Yes.
So it's only been 2 weeks since we recorded, right?
Right.
Awesome.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Well rested.
Yep.
As Brian is wiping his eyes.
Yeah, and my nose. No big deal.
Brian is dying. We also have an extra guy in our studio today.
Say
Troll Dryer.
What's up, guys?
This is Dryer, or Meta Dryer, as we're
RIW
guys call him. My caster tuffed five times in a row, Dryer.
Yeah.
What other?
He's our resident troll player that has cheaty dice.
Oh, yeah.
Cheaty dice.
He has a special tough die. No big deal.
Yeah, we're going to get on that again, huh?
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast, Dryer.
Thank you, guys. Glad to be here.
Johnny on the spot with that mute button, huh?
Yeah, fuck off. So, we're just going to, I guess, you know, this is, what, a full week now since the Michigan Cup?
Yep.
So, our games are, my games are still, I guess, relatively fresh in my memory, but just try to give sort of battle summaries of our games
like
here.
A 2-minute version here before you get through all these.
Like, I feel like the deeper I go, the longer the games might get as far as descriptions because they got better.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to do round by round, or do you want one person to go through all the rounds at once?
I think round by round, so it's not just one of us droning for half an hour, which is very well what it becomes, I think, when that happens.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine.
So, yeah. Gamer Sanctuary was sweet, and there ended up, I think, being 31 signups, but like two guys dropped for various reasons, even though they had prepaid, which...
Well, I think one of them got a new job, and then someone else had some real issues.
There was valid reasons, for I'm sure, but it ended up being... Weren't there a couple guys who hopped in, so it ended up being 31 total?
Yep. I thought it was only 29, but either way, it was right around 30.
There was a buy, so it was definitely an odd number, but yeah, it was super legit. And it ended up going the full five rounds because, you know, that's the way it goes, which I was okay with. I don't know, were you guys upset that it went that deep?
No, it's good. It's good practice. If you're ever going to win a con or something, you're going to need to play five or six rounds probably.
I mean, by round four or five, you're kind of feeling it, and you're like, oh, it's been a long
day. How many rounds is the last chance going to be at War Machine Weekend? 10? 11?
No, it's like 15? It was like 7 last year. I think this year they're breaking it into two wings, though, so it might be shorter.
Two flights?
Yeah, sure, flights. Something related to airplanes.
Okay.
They're going to break it into two jet engines. Yeah. That's how it's going
to
go.
Either way, you're going to have to play a lot of rounds sometime in your life if you want to do anything in this game.
I'm guessing, yeah. If you can't play a 6-round tournament, then you're not going to win a con of any kind of big tournament.
Right.
Over in the UK, so they do like 120-player Masters events, and they're just like, fuck it, play 8 rounds. It's ridiculous.
That sounds brutal.
I think they might split it over 2 days. I'm not really sure.
I think Bill would be okay, because I think Bill would be like... By bottom of two, I better have assassinated you, or I just muck. So it's just like a quick, like, yeah, gotcha, alright,
any game's
under the next.
Becomes really fucking important in those big, in those long events, in my opinion.
At least a few of them to get a break.
Yeah, that's what happened for me, for sure. So yeah, alright, want to talk about round one? Do you guys remember who you played? And I mean, you know.
I do.
Okay. Yeah, then you want to just go around, starting with you, and we'll just go clockwise. Okay.
Sure. So my round one, I played against Merlin. He's a cool dude. I know he listens to the podcast.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
I've never played him before. I've seen him at lots of tournaments. And, I mean, his name stands out when he gets announced in the standings and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
But I've never played him before, and I've never played against the caster he was playing, which was Constance Blaze, Tier 4. So it was like the Signar list with a bunch of Precursor Knights and... What are those? Marrow? Is that the subtext? Marrow?
Marrow, yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of Morrow dudes running around. I played Rask against him, and I made the mistake of killing, I don't know, 10 or 15 of his models on his feet turn, thinking, well, what's he going to do with these? Just transference to all these dead models? No, what he's going to do is Flashing Blade with Constance Blaze and murder all my heavies.
Yep.
And so he beat my ass pretty handily, which was demoralizing in the first round of a 5-round tournament. I know I'm going to be there all day.
Yeah.
Well, I think Bri walked up and was like, how's that storm wall looking?
And no. What happened was I walked up and I'm like, okay, there's a storm wall, but if it's really badly damaged, maybe Bill's still in this. And then Bill's like, hey, that storm wall is fresh, right? And Merwin's like, yep. And I was like, all right. And just walked away.
It's not looking good.
There was a couple chances I had where I thought I was going to win the game. I didn't realize Gallant had fucking shield guard.
Yeah.
But I Rask shot him when he was camping, I don't know, 13 focus or something. Because that's like how much he had left after killing both my heavies with Flashing Blade. But he shield guarded that, and that was pretty much the end of it. I did my best to grind it out and try and find an angle on Constance Blaze. I think I charged her with a couple Bog Drugs with Fury, but I couldn't bury her. I only did a few points of damage to her.
Yeah, she's one of those casters that you never see, and if you've, you know, like you said, you didn't know what Gallant did, and you
well, it's hard to prepare for something that you've never seen.
Well, and it's more just when you're learning a caster at a tournament table. It's, I mean, you're
at a disadvantage.
That's the thing. It was like I looked at her list, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna give her a shitload of focus. What's she gonna do with it? Flashing Blade was not the thing that stuck out in my mind.
Probably because you didn't see the flank Marowyn on there.
I didn't realize that she had flank and. Isn't she a weapon master too?
Well, flank.
Or just the flanking flank. Gives you an extra die.
Yeah.
Either way, she fucking crushed two heavies, no problem.
Were your heavies like team, poorly spaced? Do you think
they were right next to each other because so they were stopping the real threats that well, what I thought were the real threats to Rask, which let her just charge in and murder both of them. So yeah, that was yes.
They were poorly placed.
Yes, yes, they absolutely were.
Well, yeah.
I didn't know they were poorly placed
based on like knowledge. You know, yeah. had you actually known what she did, then your decision was poor. Your decision based on your knowledge was probably fine.
They were finally placed to stop Stormwall from shooting Rask in the face, which is what I thought I was doing.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's a thing. That list is interesting with the Stormwall. I never really seen anybody run. I've never seen the Blaze theme list. Besides Merwin playing it, and he usually plays it with that Stormwall, and yeah, I don't know. It seems pretty good.
But yeah, it was a very enjoyable ass-kicking, and Merlin was a super gentleman while I was playing him, and it was I was very happy to lose to him.
Yeah, I think I've only played him a couple times. But so he's got like cool-looking painted models. He's always a clean player.
Yeah, we played a fully painted match. That was fun.
Yeah, super nice guy.
So who'd you play first round?
I played our buddy Ray. A Flint native, although he was sort of he was a gun for hire for this tournament. He was playing for RIW, and he was playing his spiritual animal, which is Peace Gar. He's been like the Peace Gar, like the Mark One guy. He's always like talking to me about how like Scar Bomb used to be awesome, you know. Like, but he was playing Peace Gar and a fuckload of infantry because that's how that list always goes. He had where is Jax? He had a heavy, I think. I think he had Erebus in that list. And it was Gorgers, Raiders, Soul Hunters, a bunch of other shit. The main thing, when I looked at his lists, he had that and he had an Epic Denny list. And I immediately scanned both lists and was like, Blood Hag? And there wasn't a Blood Hag in either list. And I immediately was just like, well, then Siege. Because my Siege list has the Boomhowlers, like we talked about the first half of the episode. I knew that if he didn't have an anti-tough sort of piece, especially in that particular scenario, what was that scenario? Was like
the first one was big circular zone in the middle and
objective in the middle.
No, it was a rectangle
with an objective in the center and then two others.
Two flanking ones. It's not in the master's packet, so I don't know the name.
Yeah, I can't remember either. But you could score pretty quickly on it.
It's the one with the exploding objectives, like ammo dump or something like that.
You can kill the side objective and the middle objective because they're
and
all enemy.
Dominate the zone.
Or no, there's two of them are enemy to you. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
so you can get 4 points.
You can score
turn,
four turns. Yeah, it's bad news. So, I lucked out and I won the roll to go first, and I pretty aggressively moved up to make sure that. My Boomhowlers were just... this scenario with this Siege list works out really well because I was able to stack the Stormwall behind the Boomhowlers. Yep. When the scenario lets me do that, it's really fucking good. And he just came at me in waves, and I just kind of kept picking shit apart. His feet turn didn't really go super well. Like he was trying to get Soul Hunters onto my Stormwall, and he only put like one or two in place, and it didn't work out as well. One of them failed charge, couldn't quite make it. And then at some point, you know, we're both super jammed in the zone. And he kind of ignored my objective, so I didn't really bother killing his yet. And at about round, probably like the top of four, he had put Scar, who was camping nine, really like behind a bunch of models, but like within probably 13 inches of where Siege was behind the storm wall. And he had a lot of stuff in the way, so I wasn't going to like charge him a storm wall or anything, but I think he forgot about Foxhole, and I dropped a Foxhole and opened up line of sight, feeded, shot him with Siege. Even with all the camp, I did a good amount of damage, because I don't know what that could
be. Were you a good boy and you remember to reload Siege?
Yeah, I did. I did actually reload Siege. I think I did. I actually don't recall.
That was our thing that we concentrated on at the beginning of the episode. Oh,
don't worry.
We don't forget.
Don't worry. As we get further into these battle reports, we'll get into how I forgot a couple games, and it didn't quite bite me, thankfully. But he was within aiming range of Iris, so Siege shot her, did some damage, even through the camp. Then Iris shot her, needing five or something, stripped all her focus, and mm-hmm. then Stormwall just potted her to death. At that point, I mean, she was at 11 health. I had like a million ways to kill her. So he clearly just wasn't taking... it didn't seem like he was taking Foxhole into account. So, that became a theme throughout the day. Siege is not the kind of like rogue factor that Constance is, but I don't think people are super fluent against playing against him.
I'm trying to remember if that's what I predicted in the first episode, that you're going to Foxhole a bunch of people and kill them with Siege.
You definitely were talking about how you enjoy that as a playstyle. And I said, I like it when, you know, I can do it.
You definitely ended rounds faster than me most of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, that
which
round,
is weird.
That round ended probably 40 minutes in, maybe, something like that.
Nice.
So.
That it for that round? All right, Dreyer, what do you got?
All right, well, first, I know you guys already talked about your list, but I'll just give a quick brief of the two lists I ran.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yep. I ran Idumi and Emadric. My Idumi list was Maulg, Earthborn Mauler, Axer, Storm Troll, and then just some support with that Fulcrill Stone, Rune Bearer, some two units of Whelps. And then my Emadric list is a Fenblades, Burrowers, Min Champs with Scaldi, and then the Hero, Bomber Impaler, and then just more support going with Felcaller and Chronicler and Krillstone and stuff.
Those are pretty much the two lists you've been tuning up here for a couple months now, right?
I mean, I used to play a little more of the P-Matic brick, but I felt like Idumi changes it up a little bit and gives me a little more options. So first round, I played Dox from RIW. He was playing Menoth, and his lists were Amon and I think it was Ephiora.
Yep. No,
and,
Ephiora.
Was it P?
Yeah.
And I assumed like he wasn't going to run that with Krillstone and basically canceling out fire.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's probably an anti-Krix list, more than likely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I assumed, okay, he's probably throwing him on, so I'll run my Emadric list. You know, hopefully, you know, he had four Jacks, he had two Reckoners, two Vanquishers, and just a couple units of Daughters.
Seems kind of atypical for a Mon list.
Is there a typical Mon list?
I think, like, I don't know, seven dervishes or something.
Oh, like the synergy build. Yeah.
Isn't that how you play them on?
That's the how everybody on the internet says they play them on. I've never actually seen them on a table.
I mean, synergy wasn't really a part of that game, I don't think. So I feel like this is a little more different style, I guess.
Okay.
But I got to go first. He played them on. I played Emadric. Just kind of ran everything up. He did the same. Got the Daughters up the field a little bit. And started getting his jacks in position to shoot the objectives, bottom of two. So top of two for me, Fenblades go. They mini feet, run charge. I was able to get one of the units of Daughters to flee, which they ended up fleeing for around two turns, which was pretty big. Just standing there not doing anything was huge. The other unit kind of got picked apart. I had Warcried the Fenblades, so now they're Mad 8. Much more reliable to hit. And my Burrowers were kind of jammed up, so they just all went on those, like, four or five Daughters. Yeah, I need, like, I think tens to hit.
Yeah,
but when I have...
a shitload of dice.
When I have, yeah, like, you know, 16 attacks, let's just say.
Yeah,
I'm bound to hit a couple.
Right, you're going to kill some. Yep.
So, besides that, though, a little more positioning. Kind of using the objective to block things and wait for him to come up the field. Because I knew he couldn't just sit back, or else my burrowers and fern blades would, you know, get in there. So as, you know, as his turn went, he was able to destroy those objectives, the one in the center and the other one. So he got two quick points. I really wasn't too concerned because I had most of my army in that center zone.
Right.
And he ended up clearing out, he ended up feeding, loading up a bunch of his jacks with a bunch of focus, and his plan was to get to my bomber and my champs, which were kind of behind a few burrowers, fenblades, that kind of thing. And unfortunately for him, I had a fenblade tough about two or three times.
Right.
Right in the center of a Reckoner's charge lane.
Yep. Yep.
So he ended up walking up, I believe it was a Reckoner, with like four focus, or it might have been a Vanquisher, I can't remember off the top of my head, and literally just say, I'm spending all four of these focus to kill that one Fenblade. And it was like, okay, you know. So it kind of just grinded out, and I ended up getting Blood Fury on some champions, and they killed both a Vanquisher and a Reckoner between four models.
Yeah, I can see that.
So charges on a Weapon Master with Blood Fury is pretty disgusting.
You definitely picked the right list there.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Weapon Master infantry list is just such a good foil to a low model count, jack heavy, especially slower jacks like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't like alpha you.
Yeah, well, that was the whole thing. You know, and I had enough jamming with, you know, like the burrowers normally, feel like I'm usually expecting them to do more work with Blood Fury. In that game, they kind of just took out one of the Reckoner's guns, you know, the one arm. That was it. So, you know, normally I kind of expect more out of them. Maybe I shouldn't, but, you know, it doesn't always work out that way. But I definitely felt like I was winning in the attrition.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where he had, like, a Reckoner left and a Mon and some Choir and some odds and ends and just had to load up the zone. And I was able to kill his objective, dominate the zone the next turn. Now I'm up 3-2, and now he knows he has to do something huge.
Right.
And Madrick went, killed the last Reckoner. I feeded because I basically was just saving it the whole game. I never got a chance where like I felt like I was getting a lot of mileage out of it.
Yeah, right.
And was able to dominate the zone again and take it down.
Cool. Right on, man. So round two, Bill.
All right, I just pulled up my steamroller packet. I'm pretty sure that round two was process. Does that look right, guys?
Correct. Just two zones.
I'm pretty sure it was process. Yeah, it was process.
Two objectives in center, correct.
Yeah, yep. That's right. Yep.
I played against Ron. I know the guy was a pretty new player, as I was consulted in making his lists. But he was playing Hyperion. Pretty standard Ron list. Hyperion, a couple units of Mittens. And Stormfalls. The Hyperion went down pretty early to a Furied Rassler after taking it on the chin from a Furied Posse. So it took more than expected to kill it, but the Hyperion was the number one target. He went down pretty quick. While I just contested the other side with the other Posse with No, they weren't even wound up. They were just hanging out because I was playing Rask again. I was going to say all buffed up, but that's my Malak list. After I killed the Hyperion, pretty quickly Ron was just standing there with his pants down behind a wreck marker, and then ultimately inside the wreck marker. The game ended when I took a shot at him with Rask. He's like defense 20 in that wreck marker. And Rask stood still and shot him with a defense 7 gun and hit. I needed like a 13 or something, boosted and hit. So
who was talking about dice earlier? Who was talking about dice?
Yeah. Certainly,
bring this up.
Certainly had a good shot. It was 2.5 above average.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that made the rest with the Furied Rassler kind of elementary. Walked in and just murdered him in one shot.
A def 7 gun, man. I think it's killed a lot of casters.
Basically, that's all I did was kill a Hyperion and then kill a Ron right immediately after. It was, I don't know, like turn 3.
Gotcha.
It was pretty quick.
Short games.
Yeah, I got to watch a lot.
Yours didn't sound like it was short.
Play a lot of Watch Machine that round.
Well, my armies are more attrition based, and that's definitely the place that I blend. I really don't go for assassinations unless I feel like I have to.
Yeah, I think like Doomy 2 can end games quick, but that doesn't mean he should.
And
it just means he can.
Well, my round 2 game was quick, and we'll get to that. But
My round 2 was against a dude named Nick. He was playing Rhett.
He had a Raven list and an Ossian list, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what? Maybe it was Ron.
What was my dude's name? I don't remember. It was Damien.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Damien. Yeah,
yes, that was it.
So, and Nick had, I believe it was, it was Raven Ron. And I,
Raven Ron or Ossian? You said Ossian.
I'm pretty sure it's Ron, actually, now that I think about it. So, cool. But one list was definitely, no, sorry, that's not right. It was Raven Calissa. And it was, the Raven list was, I think, a theme list because it had double strike force with UA.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Calissa list, I think, was just a standard list. And it was more of like a Banshee. It was like an AFG, a Banshee, a Phoenix, and then some units. Including one Mage Hunter Strike Force with UA. So as soon as I saw Strike Force, I got really leery about dropping my Striker 2 list because that list is pretty much all the infantry are really hard to kill normally with POW 10 guns, but Arcane Assassin or Blessed or whatever is really a problem.
Nullifies a lot.
Yeah, they all just fucking die. Like the Stormblades go down just like that. So
yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll play Siege again. And it was only a Divide and Conquer 1 tournament. We knew at this point it was going at least 4 rounds, so I was like, well, it's not the end of the world if I play Siege again. So I played Siege, and this was a really blundery game for me. I think I went second. He got up the field fairly aggressively. Not crazy fast, but he got up the field pretty quick. I started activating, and the way I had done a sort of a layered mixed deployment where the Boomhauers were sort of in three clumps with some stuff in between. And unfortunately, I somehow managed, when I was deploying, I moved something, I think it was Squire, into a spot I don't normally put him in, and I actually pinned Boomhauer in, and I didn't realize it. So I activate the unit, start running, and Boomhauer's pinned between, like, literally between two small bases and the side of the Stormwall. So he just can't move. And I've ran the entire unit now out of his fucking command range, pretty much. Like, not the entire unit, but a lot of the units out of his command range. And I was like, oh my god, what am I doing here? So then I'm making individual command checks for all the guys who are out at minus two, and some of them fail because, you know, that's the way that goes. At that point, I had already activated my Rupert too, so I couldn't fearless them. It was brutal. So then, I got my stuff up the field and, a little bit at least, and killed a little bit of stuff, whatever. So then the next turn, he feats on me, and the next turn he knocks down a bunch of Boomhauers. So between being knocked down and out of command, I like couldn't get them out of the way of the Stormwall. So the Stormwall couldn't really move forward too much. And then after I activate them, I realize Siege is like, you know, he's like ass to the breeze. Like he needs to get behind some Boomhauers. Well, I walk around behind some Boomhauers, like use all 5 inches to walk behind two Boomhauers. And so I have a little bit of a line of sight gap between the Boomhauers and Stormwall currently, right? I checked the kill box, and I realized I'd kill box myself, and I was like, sweet.
So your game's just tail spinning a little bit at this point.
Yeah, and it's his feat turn, so I'm like, all right, well, he had Dahlia and Scareth also on that list, so I shot up Scareth because he doesn't get the feat, and I pushed into the zones a little with what I had, but I was in serious trouble. His turn, my right-hand zone, he beats the shit out of the objective, but brings it down to like 4 hit points, doesn't kill it. Then he's like, okay, cool, I dominate, and I win. And I was like, no. Or he's like, I dominate, and I'm at 4, because I'd given him 2 at the kill box.
Nope.
He fell like 4 points short of just auto-winning the game by just killing the objective and dominating that zone.
But it's because he forgot a little bit.
Well,
maybe didn't
he didn't
to
really... He probably could have committed harder to killing it, but yeah, he didn't realize it needed to be dead because it contested. So he was like, oh, shit. And I was like, all right. So next turn, I look at the table. His caster's really far forward, like in Siege aim range. And I was like, all right, well, this game is a complete fucking disaster, so screw it. I'm just going to kill him. And I foxholed all the stuff down in front of Calissa, who was sitting empty, and one-shotted her with a rocket from Siege on the feet, which is good that I one-shot her because I forgot to reload. Womp womp. Yeah. It was such a blundery game, and I was so tilted from like that stupid I pin Boomhauer in move that I did at the beginning. Like undid all my plans in my head, and I the whole game I was just like.
And he was pinned in from all sides, so it's not like you could run him back and around kind of thing.
Right. Or, yeah. It was bad. Just it was really.
It's like he's stuck.
Yeah, and then that caused like half the unit to break, and then they got chewed up by various guns, and then it was bad, man. But anyway, you know, siege sometimes can get you out of trouble by just killing their caster, and when you shoot their caster in the face at dice plus +7, it's pretty reliable as long as you can hit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Had I not hit her, though, I still had a Stormwall sitting there with all, you know.
She's defense 16. Did she have any kind of cover or anything?
Nope. He'd put her in the back of the zone, and he had two heavies, you know, base-to-base in front of her. Just, again, not accounting for Foxhole. He hadn't really played much against Siege before, so, again, you know, sort of a... You can read Foxhole on the card, but it looks like a buff until you see it used offensively, and then you go, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
So I lucked out on that one pretty bad because I played pretty poorly, but... You know, another short round for me, probably like another 3 or 4 round game.
My round two, I played Jake Hickok. I've played him a couple times now. Always exciting games, I feel like.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's playing Signar, and before we even sat down, he told me he was going to be playing Kane. It was P Kane, right? I believe.
No, Kane.
No,
2.
It was Kane 2. Sorry, I'm really bad with the P and
the
E.
That's
shit.
The one with the big sword, right?
Shut up.
But he was running boom howlers. I think it was Forgeguard dwarf infantry.
Hammer
dwarfs? Is that what it was? Hammer dwarfs.
Forgeguard. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
rowdy.
Yeah.
He was playing Keith's Kane 2 list.
Yeah, gun mages kind of thing.
Well, I don't know if it has Keith's one has gun mages, but it was similar to Keith's Kane 2 list. We'll put it that.
And so I kind of felt like. Madrix list might get kind of chewed up just from all the gun mages and all that kind of stuff.
I
don't know.
You were correct.
Looking back, maybe, I don't know. But I went with my Doomy list, and he chose that list. I, again, got to go first, which was kind of nice. But I kind of put myself in a really bad scenario situation where top of 1 and top of 2, I really didn't get in the zones. got in my left zone and, like, hunkered down my whole army there. And the right zone was, like, bear.
Yeah.
And
that sometimes happens with like the troll brick lists.
I have such a small footprint that I didn't want to just like split up that early. So he had Rowdy charge the objective on the left of him, kill it, and moved Kane up. And he really wanted to try to kill my storm troll. Wasn't able to do that. Teleported him away, dominated the zone, and jumped right up to 3 points. Cool. So,
sounds like a good start for somebody that wasn't even in the zones.
Yeah, this is not good for me. Not good. So at this point, top 3, I kind of like realized that.
Wait, are you saying he was up 3-0?
He was up 3-0.
Okay. I was gonna say
no. He was up 3-0. It was not. I realized that I kind of fucked up and was not in good shape. So at that point, I realized I have to try my best to kill him. You know, he had jammed my brick up with some boom howlers too. And kind of filter the gun mages in between. And I felt like even if I, feed it and ran a Mauler into that zone, like I feel like it wouldn't be hard for him to clear a little bit out, get Rowdy on Mauler, kill him, dominate the zone, win the game. Like I felt like at that point, with my low model count, it wouldn't be that hard for him to dominate again.
Right.
So I figured, let's go for it. I got to try to kill Kane camping like 1 or none. He was empty behind Rowdy. So I feeded, moved Doomy up, melee killed a boom howler.
What a monster.
I know, right? He was taking it down. And I want to say this in fairness to Jake. His dice betrayed him a little bit, and 4 up tough, you're looking at 50%, and he probably made 3 out of 11. So, I got a little bit of luck there. But Primal Shock killed a couple gun mages to help clear some lanes. Genissa shifted boom howler out of the way. Earthborn and the Mauler helped clear out a bunch, goading. And finally I got a lane where I was able to put, with my Axer, rush on Mulg, wild aggression, and charged him. So at this point, he's charging 12 inches because of my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And got him over where, Rowdy was. And, first punch, killed the gun mage. Used my bat on the second one, missed, bought an attack, killed it.
For the record, I hate that you call it a bat.
That's what it is, it's a bat!
It's like a tree, dude.
It's a killing bat.
It's a bat that's been carved out of a tree.
Like, so it's like Wonder Boy?
Yeah.
That's the name of the bat in The Natural, right?
Something like that, yeah.
I think it's Wonder Boy. Anyway.
So I was able to goad my way around after killing these gun mages, and I goaded my way around Rowdy, staying in, you know, his front arc, and getting to where I was in melee of Kane. So at this point, I think I'm at 7, I need 10s to hit.
Doesn't Kane get a defense bonus being base-to-base with
Rowdy? He was not base-to-base.
Oh.
Yes. That was another little oopsie, I feel like. I feel like he should have been base-to-base, or should have been farther back, maybe in the very back corner. I might not have been able to go.
Okay, hold on, time out. You're once again mixing up Stryker and Kane, Bill. Jesus Christ. No, Kane does not get any bonuses from being in base. Nobody gets base to base with Rowdy bonuses other than Stryker.
I don't feel nearly as bad mixing up casters now with big time Bill over here mixing them up too.
I always fuck those guys up. Sure you said it was the guy with the sword, right? All right, anyway, I'm derailing here. We're going way too slow, by the way.
I'm trying to go quick.
You're going way too slow.
I'm just saying. Trying to go quick. And goading around, needing tens to hit. Hit on the first one, you know. Dice plus, you know, he's empty. So I'm definitely up on dice.
Probably at least like dice plus 5, right?
I think it's...
Dice plus a million, I don't know.
He's got to be like 13 or 14
armor. You hit him and he died, right?
Well, no, I hit him once and he had like 2 life left.
Huh.
And bought an attack. And, well, I mean, I could have boosted and I figured, you know, I still have his affinity and a bunch of other attacks because I think I could have bought like 3 or 4. So, wild aggression, you know, obviously I'm pretty reliably hitting 3 dice to hit.
So, what you're saying is you killed an armor 13 caster with a PAL 22 beast with 8 attacks.
It was not PAL 22. I did not have rage because I had to rush him.
Oh, my bad.
Yes, calm down.
He's only PAL 20.
I felt kind of lucky on that. Like, I don't think I played it well.
You definitely took the scenario. You got there, but once you got there, it was like a nice.
No, it was the issue of trying to kill boom howlers in the way.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a storm troll having to snipe one out, and he didn't tough, and like stuff like that, where it was like. If he toughs there, or he makes 2 or 3 of them, I'm scratching my head going, I don't know how I pull the shit out of my ass.
Yeah, that's pretty much the tale of Boomhauers. It's either, like, when you're playing, when you're using them, they're either like, oh my god, they're never dying. Like, there was that game I played against Jay where I literally put, like, 3 turns of Stormwall at 3 focus into them and killed, like, 3 of them.
Yep.
Or you have a turn like that where you lose 8 of them in 1 turn and you're like, holy shit, it just happens.
It goes that way with any tough models.
And so at this point, at round 2, at round 1, GG did really well. We were, what, 5-1?
5-2.
Or 5-2, because there were 7 of us, right?
Yeah, there were 7.
And then round 2, we were like 4-3 or something like that, maybe? 5-... We're doing decent, but...
Yeah, we lost track of the overalls after the first round. Yeah. I just know who was winning and who was losing.
We had, I think, like 3 2-0 players at that point still.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so and we'll turbo through the remaining rounds because we don't have a ton more time here to record.
Right.
So, let's see. So round 3, Bill.
Round 3 was incoming.
Okay.
I played Ray, Brian's first round opponent. He played E. Denny, and as we discussed before, my list for E. Denny or any Crix really was Malok. And unfortunately, this is one of those asymmetrical. It's symmetrical, but not. Not lined up down the center, where he's got a zone he can dominate that's on his side of the board. So I'm in trouble, and I knew he was going to take Denny because of that.
Yeah, I really dislike this scenario for the record, but we can get into that later. We have more time for me to bitch about it.
I lined up the Gator unit that I was going to really buff. I lined them up across from his scenario and just ran them straight at it. The other unit of Gators that weren't getting a lot of buffs, they're just going to be tough. Went at mine just to contest it from the statistics that were going to come at it. Turn 2, I got my Gators in to his zone, and they were tough, and they held that zone so well. He didn't score a single scenario point. And what it came down to is he got impatient, and he tried to come in and kill Malok with Denny by teleporting her back into the rest of his army. Or teleporting him back into the rest of her army.
Oh, so he like went up and stabbed Malok.
He stabbed Malok and teleported Malok backwards towards his army.
Into the Banes and whatnot.
Which left him getting shot by a couple of Crow's Cutthroats and charged by a couple Banes, which he survived.
Yeah.
As soon as he survived, it's like...
Yeah, as soon as he survived, there's Denny with her pants down and a Rassler charged her and put her down.
And she was not incorporeal that turn.
She was not incorporeal that turn. It was the off turn.
Well, actually, she couldn't be incorporeal because as soon as she makes a melee attack, it goes away.
Yeah.
So,
So she came in and slung a couple of my guys around. And I think it was probably a patience thing. I don't know that he was going to score any points just by me. I just kept replenishing the Gators that were in that zone with revive. He'd kill a couple of them. They, you know, get through the Tufts, and then I would just bring one or two back.
I know we talked about this a little in the sort of first half of the episode that we recorded, but Gators are surprisingly good against like kind of infantry swarms because of the multiple attacks and the rerolls sometimes apply depending on who you're fighting. And the fact that you can revive them, usually you look at like high armor, 8-wound, you know, medium base shit, and you're like, that's bad against, you know, dude swarm.
Beans.
Yeah.
It totally wasn't. Especially when that was the side that had the extra, both bull snappers were over there, and Wrong Eye was over there holding one of those bull snappers. So they were like all spiny growth too.
Yeah.
It was, they were, what, arm 22, and then on the feet turn 24.
Right.
Yeah.
Especially when you could absorb a little bit of that charge, too. It's charging, and he's rolling at, like, dice minus 12 or something. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean,
she's got Curse of Shadows, but still.
You're not liking it.
Yeah.
Because you're probably not one-shotting them unless you roll bunkers on damage.
No, right. And you play, we talked about this before, but you play a patient game where you don't give him the whole unit of Gators to charge. You give him, like, two, and you let their reach cover the rest.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they got to put a bunch of shit in, and then your back Gators take it, you know.
It was Bane Thralls and Crows, so no reach of no Bane Knights, which probably would have been a lot worse for me.
Yeah, Crows can be pretty nasty to Gators, but ultimately probably we're not as gonna do as much damage as Banes would.
Well, they weren't living, so Crows.
Oh yeah, right. Crows okay, doesn't do that much. Then Crows were bad.
Remember, they're undead and tough the whole game.
Yep, that's right. All right, cool.
So you're able to take that one down.
So I took that one down with a Denny kill, giving up no points for control, which was a point of pride for me.
You got
probably
to go
a bit
first,
of a surprise.
I believe I did go first. Yeah. I can't remember for sure.
That definitely helps against E. Denny. She's got that play where she can lock your whole army in place, so you don't score on your second, and then he gets basically two turns to clear zones and score on his second.
But, yeah,
but yeah,
I found all day when I played. I played, you know, spoiler alert. I played Denny again, but being able to respawn your guys really helps on those turns when you can't move.
Oh, yeah.
Just spawning that guy into a zone to contest it or whatever.
It's pretty much an auto-contest.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about
it. And frankly, it was an auto-contest and kill two guys.
Anything that can place models is really good against Denny.
Yep. So that was my 1 minute.
Cool. I played Chuck third round, I believe. Yeah, I did. And that's why it was one of the complaints about the scenario, actually. But I got...
You had some list chicken issues, right?
A little bit. I played Siege twice already, and I could have done the math and figured out that we had the right amount of like winners.
We had enough X and O's that it had to go five.
I didn't do that before the round started, which is completely my fault. So I wasn't sure if it was going to go four. I'm like, well, if I take Siege again, I'm locking myself in a Striker 2 last round. So this is where like hubris kind of kicked in a little bit, and I was like, well, I think I can compete against Infantry Heavy Crixilis, which is what Chuck was playing. He was playing Scar 1 and Venithrax, and they were both very, you know, dude swarmy. And I said, I'm pretty sure I could compete with them with Striker 2, but it's not like a good matchup by any stretch. But Rebuke is a pretty powerful tool against Crix. So that was my reasoning. I chose Striker 2. He chose Venithrax. Ultimately, what really stood out was I had a bunch of living infantry and he had a Soul Harvester spell that he could move around, and Venithrax was sitting on like 15 focus every turn.
Just to be clear, if this was a round one matchup, you would have played Siege.
Yeah.
And that's for the Eris?
It's because the threat to kill him, and also that list has a fuckload of guns and would have cleared all... Like, that Venithrax list did not have any armor crackers outside of Deathjack and Venithrax. The rest of it was like Blood Gorgers, Satixus Raiders, Satixus Blood Witches. None of that shit kills a Stormwall. And I'll make sure the Blood Hag and the Wither Shadow Combine don't get near enough to poke off the Arcane Shield. And then at that point, that thing's fucking invincible.
Well, I think, right, like you said, if you would have thought about it more...
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's something that you should, like, I think everyone can learn too, is you shouldn't be like, oh, I don't want to lock myself in.
Yeah.
Because you got to get to that point too. Like, if you don't win that game, it doesn't matter.
What you're saying is absolutely correct. On top of that, when you're playing fucking Chuck, you have to just be like, how do I beat Chuck? Let's do that.
Agreed.
Let's not, like, handicap myself further.
Hey, no, I trust me.
But I had a lot of confidence with that Striker list. And actually, the game went surprisingly well. Really, the frustrating part was that he was able to just chill with Venithrax in his zone, and I was able to throw stuff in it every turn, so he wasn't dominating it on mine. But he got to go second, which I gave him because I didn't want to get run over by Raiders. He got to go second, and so he started scoring first, and I couldn't keep him from scoring on his turn. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put anything of quality in there. There was one error I made that I realized later, which is on a feat turn, I forgot to move my Stormclad out of the Deathjack's charge range, which is a big, like, here's a 10-point jack. But anyway, so game ground down. I finally, at the end, I couldn't stop him from scoring to win, so I was just like, fuck it. And I charged out with Striker and overcharged for three dice and pow 29 his Deathjack dead in two hits just to get more, you know...
Go out swinging.
More army points on my sheet, you know, whatever. So yeah. I ended up losing that game. I ended up killing like 45 points of his army or something. Like it was.
I know when I walked by, the table was not full. It was pretty.
It was just junk left. But Venithrax could literally just be a mile away from my caster, which is not what Striker wants. Striker wants the scenario zones to be closer together. So if you're gonna like a close quarters, if you're gonna dominate your flag in close quarters, mm-hmm. I'll kill you fucking dead.
See, now,
that thing, that whatever that scenario is called, what is it called again?
Incoming.
It's so far away.
I feel like this is definitely a discussion for another podcast. But I feel like the scenario has its pros and cons. To whereas if you're playing a power caster and now you want to just sit in your back zone and get those 1 points, you're taking them out of the game. And a caster, maybe like a butcher or something, I'll let you sit back there because that helps me.
It depends on what you mean by a power caster. You mean like Haley? Because she will sit back in that.
I shouldn't say power.
Day.
I should say like want to get up in the shit.
Well, that's the thing.
You know what I mean?
It allows you to play a backline caster effectively, and it also allows you to like Venithrax doesn't really do anything other mm-hmm. than he feats and makes a bunch of smoke clouds, which
so
are
it works for him.
Yeah, it works very well.
And that's why I think it's frustrating for you too in that game.
Yeah. Well, and it would have been frustrating with Siege too, because had I actually went to go dominate on my zone, his zone is he could be out of all my gun ranges in his zone. He could be that far out in the corner,
mm-hmm.
And that's because of the horizontal layout of the correct. Zones. But you live, you learn. I definitely would have played it differently a little bit. I definitely would have played my other list. But it was a pretty close game, which was a bummer. I really wanted to be Chuck there, but I was still 2-1, and my strength of schedule was obviously going to be good, because so far my only loss is to Chuck. So,
all right, my round three game, I played Dan Burns. He was playing Kador.
Oh, okay, yeah.
He was the one who played another buddy of ours, GG Marshall, in round two.
That's right, okay.
He was playing Vlad 3.
Vlad 3. I feel like it was a little unconventional. Conquests, two units of Doom Reavers, Fenris... the Dragoon.
If it wasn't all horses,
it wasn't all horses.
I think it's unconventional.
For Vlad's feat, it was Vlad, Fenris, and the Dragoon. That was it.
Yeah, I think the Conquest is probably the unconventional.
And he also had a full unit of Demo Corps. So different for sure.
Yeah.
Different for sure.
Yes.
Not necessarily bad.
And, right away, I feel like he definitely wanted to try to jam me with the Doom Reavers and start dominating his zone. I took my Doomy list again just because I felt like... I don't want to run a bunch of infantry against Doom Reavers. And his other list was Butcher 3. So I felt like just beasts, don't have to worry about command checks, anything like that.
I'm surprised he didn't play Butcher 3 just based on your faction.
Maybe,
I don't know, but maybe he played it twice already or something. I don't know.
I know he played Vlad the one before and had good luck with Scenario, so I think he wanted to keep that rolling, maybe.
Okay.
So early on, he starts running stuff up, and I position again. He tries to go for a crit consume on my brick. Missed. He needed a 12 over the wall shooting my mauler.
What was the crit consume going to do?
Or not crit consume, the crit...
Devastation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Trying to slam everything back and,
He tried to throw, your entire brick on there.
Correct.
Okay, I gotcha.
And, defense 16 behind the wall. He rolled a 4-4-3. So, had the crit, just missed.
No, that's too high.
So... nothing really happened early on. I lost a Storm Troll. He lost, three Doom Reavers. And he started, getting ready to position to dominate his zone. And I kind of said, fine, you can get your points. I'm going to have Mole get POW 23, Charger Conquest, on my feet turn. And, Mole took it down.
Right.
So at this point, Mole does that. There's not, I'm not really scared of too much. Basically took out the one unit of Doom Reavers. The other ones were kind of tied up via the objective, and I ran a couple Krillstone guys over there. And I, on my, you know, feet turn, I ran Earthborn over by the wreck just to hang out because I really didn't have anything else to do with him at that point. So he goes, he dominates bottom of my turn and the top of his. So he's already up to 2 points.
Ugh.
But I kind of wasn't afraid of it because I knew, like, he's only getting one a turn. I'm at least going to act, you know, for the most part.
Right.
Because I have most of my brick in my own zone. I think he had Saxon in or something. That's why I didn't get a point. So he goes, the Doom Reavers charge, kill my objective. That was about it for him. Kind of positioned, Demo Core charged, you know, used all their backswings in the, Flad 3 spell that gives them the Signs of Importance. What was it?
I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, I know.
It's like Hand of something, I want to say, or something.
Fate?
Yeah, Hand of Fate, maybe, or something.
Yeah.
So they just crapped on the Mauler, you know. Yeah, Mauler died, oh well. Yeah. You know, I was, at that point, I really didn't care too much. So he dominates again. So he's, or no, he
so he's at like 4 points now? So he killed an objective and dominated thrice now?
He dominated on, at the end of mine, his, and killed the objective. So he's at 3.
Okay.
So at this point, I know I have to start addressing the issue. Maul goes in, still has Wild Aggression on him, kills all the Demo Core and Fenris. Just bopping people on
no
the
big
head.
Deal.
You know, and yeah, just doing work.
Just Mulgan Wonder Boy.
Business as usual.
Pow 20 attacks, no big deal.
You know,
Mulgan Wonder Boy doing yeah. work.
It was kind of nice. Kind of did some work on Doom Reavers, just tying him up with some Krillstone guys again. Not really addressing him, but just more like, I don't want to deal with you kind of thing. And I realized at this point that, you know, he's whittled down to his Dragoon, his Caster, and just a couple odds and ends. So I put Rush on Earthborn, and I, you know, he was in the wreck, so he's already now speed 7, so he can run 16 inches. And I just ran him right behind Vlad, and, you know, there was a wall, you know, far, a little in the distance, so he's arm 20 right now. He's behind Vlad, so Vlad can't charge. Dragoon can't charge. I'm towing the zone. Okay, have fun. Try to kill him and win this game. And Vlad at POW 13 is just not going to do the job.
Yeah.
spent all his focus and maybe did like 8 or 9 damage. Like, it just was not working.
Yeah, 13 on 20 is not going
to
do it.
So at this point, I'm starting to dominate my own zone. So he's not scoring. I'm scoring. And eventually got to a point where I got up to 4, and he was stuck at 3. And he looks at me, and he has, you know, his Dragoon and Vlad in his own zone and, like, 2 Doom Reavers. And he goes, there's no way I can win this because I can't even get over there to contest you. Right. And I'm like, no. And he's like, all right, good game. Right. You know, and afterwards he told me, you know, he thought he had it locked scenario-wise. And then right. I ran an Earthborn 16 inches and just said, you know, you can't deal with this. You lost too many Doom Reavers. You lost your Conquest. You know.
Well, that's where something like a really big attrition swing is better sometimes than going up early points. As long as you know you have time where you're not going to get diced down or something in the middle of this process. Because then you're eventually taking away their ability
well,
to score.
Well, like I said, that's why when I saw Conquest, I go, okay, I'll let you get your point on the bottom of 2 to make sure, you know, hey, Conquest is off the table. Now you really have a rough time dealing with my armor.
Yeah.
You know?
Legit.
So I ended up 3-0 after the third round there, so I was pretty excited.
Cool. Yeah. You're the last hope for GG.
I know, I was carrying the torch, and Chuck had me in his sights, at, you know, he was eyeing me.
You were 3-0 at that point, and I think that you were he was the only... Yeah. 3-0 at that point.
Yeah,
I think you were the last. Did we have 2 3-0s?
No, it was me and Bri were going into that round.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that might have been the case. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So round 4, I believe, was Into the Breach. Almost positive. I know this one came up, and I don't think it was the last scenario.
No,
that was the last scenario.
That was the last scenario.
Yep.
Then I don't remember what the last. It was something else with a circle in the middle. Was it maybe?
It was a circle.
It was the circle with
supply and demand.
Yep. It's one where you can't dominate if you have your opponent's
And your control kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. So supply and demand. And I pulled one of our own, Dan Hochnacki, the guy he's been on here before talking about Kador.
Yep.
So this was the first time I think any of us had to play each other.
Yeah, we got pretty fortunate up to this point, which was cool.
Yeah, it was nice to not have to dunk our own guys. Especially when 5 of us won the first round.
Yeah, I thought for sure we were going to call
after that, I was sure we were going to start running each other.
We didn't.
But I played Rask again. He played P. Sorsha, which was bad news for Rask, to be honest. He had P. Sorsha, Behemoth, and Winter Guard Rifle Corps.
Yeah.
That was the bulk of his army. He had Joe, of course, and a couple of Mortars, which are pretty good when you're stationarying my entire fucking
army. Yeah, really good in that list. Yeah, that was just good.
Yeah. So he went first. He charged out in front. I moved my guys up. I'm ambushing Bogtrog, so they're not on the table yet. He's feeding on turn top of two. He's feeding. He gets both my posses and I think he didn't get Rask. Luckily, no, he didn't. But he basically has my entire front line, 10 models, all stationary. He's charging Doom Reavers into them and shooting mortars at them and just fucking hammering them.
Yeah.
So luckily I had some tough going on. A couple of them got toughed. But he basically time walked me that turn too, because they're bogging up like a fairly funnily piece of terrain or terrain setup where my army was like 10 wide of medium bases, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So he had his way with the scenario zone there. Luckily, I was able to get a Rassler up there that could shake the stationary to contest the zone. And he was tuned up a little bit with a spiny growth. So he was fairly safe up there. Turn three, I bring the... On my turn two, I did bring the Bogtrogs in, and they were kind of just giving Behemoth something to shoot at.
Did you feed that turn?
You know what? I didn't feed that turn.
Oh, okay.
I feeded the following turn.
It sounds like a feed turn, but...
It was like his feed turn. If I had feeded, I would have been in a little better situation, I think. But so I feeded the next turn, and Sorsha was trying to stationary spell whatever it's called, Icy Grip or Frozen Grip or whatever Icy it's grip. Called. And he couldn't get to a point... Like, he ran Sorsha up, well, not run, obviously, but charged, like, you know, charged or advanced, whatever, and got... I don't know, probably like 5 1/4 inches away from these guys.
Yeah.
And found out he couldn't do it. And then when rushed back, put himself in a situation where I'm thinking about how I'm going to kill Sorsha next turn. I wasn't able to fashion that kind of assassination run that turn. But he just handed me his beast. He forgot about Boundless Charge.
Oh, Beast 09 went down?
Yeah. And Beast 09 just went down without making an attack the entire game.
Yeah.
A Rassler just walked up and murdered
him. Wasn't there something else you said he forgot about, too? Because you could have Boundless Charge him, or...
I could have Elasticity'd as well.
Yeah, you had an extra 2 inches of threat.
Yeah, there was just 2 inches of threat. There was 4 inches of threat, and he didn't account for either one of them.
Yeah, right.
and Beast, he gave me Beast for free, which is what, after the game, he told me, where he basically, he knew he was in deep shit.
Yeah, plus 11 points.
Behemoth is just hanging out, murdering Bogtrogs, who I've now conceded to just running them behind Rask. And doing my feet here, so that anything that does get through to Rask, I'm just going to use them as a bank of life.
Yep.
They're not going to do any work. Then, so we're like turn four here. No scenario has really happened. This is a hard zone to score on. And killing the objective is really just, you're going to get 1 point, and that's it. He decided to do what he said was play it like Bill would play it, and he tried to assassinate me. With a very ballsy charge, and then like freezing grip my Rask, which he hit with. So I have a stationary Rask, and then he wind rushed back away. But his wind rush, the safest place he could put it was like base to base with two Gatorman posse back to back, like back to his back, Sorsha's back to the front of them. I guess he took away the charge, but either way, he stationaried my Rask. Which is the problem here. Fortunately, his guns, his two mortars, one of them couldn't get there, and the other one rolled like a 3 for damage or something. I got pretty lucky. And the Behemoth, both of them, neither of his damage rolls exceeded either.
Jesus.
It was nice. It was real nice. I mean, to be fair, I had a fair number of Bogtrogs there, even if he got through all of my armor and hit points. Well, just the 15 armor and, you know, 15 hit points. You know, Rask hadn't taken any damage before this.
Yeah, it sounded low percentage, but then the dice shit on him on top of that.
Yeah.
So.
And then it was a matter of Rask activating. He can't shoot Sorsha to put her defense to 7 because she's locked up with Gators already. And even then, she's like defense fucking 17 or something.
18.
Good. And so Rask just walks over and gives Fury to those Gators. So if they do hit, they kill her. And a couple of them hit.
We hit the rerolls too, right?
Yeah, I did. Yep. I chanted rerolls. I managed to hit with 2 of them, and that was enough. And I had a backup of scar bombing with the witch doctors too. Both of them had lines at her.
So you rolled 2 11s?
With rerolls. No, well, it's not it's an 11, because they were in back arc.
Yeah, back.
So there were 9s on 18s.
Nines.
Okay, all right. 9s I could see.
Yeah, I rolled two 9s out of...
Two 11s, not so much.
You know, I had 8 chances to roll 9s.
Yeah. That's definitely two. That's definitely
two attacks definitely each, yep. And, yeah, no, in a reroll on each
11s,
of them.
It made it didn't
much
make
more like wow, sense. You diced, yeah.
Nines, yeah, nines are feasible.
Yeah, so that put them away, and then if that didn't work, I had the Scar Bomb on backup plan.
Oh yeah, that's auto hitting on her.
Just auto hitting POW 16s.
Yep, that's really good.
Does work.
Those are really that. Oh yeah, super good.
So I ended that. I felt pretty good about getting away with it when my caster was stationary, but I like to think that even if he rolled some decent damage rolls, I would have been all right with if probably 4 bog trogs at that point in his sacrifice range. So who'd you play round 4?
I played a dude named Colin. I think it was Colin from BC.
Yep.
But you played him later, right?
I played him in round 5, yeah.
Okay. So he was playing Peace Scar, and a lot of Mechanithralls. I think it was actually like 2 min units, but no Necrosurgeons, surprisingly. He had a Seether, a Deathjack. He had a Seether and a Deathjack, and do you have full Raiders?
I didn't get to see any of the game, so
I'm trying to think of what his other infantry were. I'm kind of drawing a blank here. He had Bane Knights for sure. And then he might have had Raiders also. But his list did not have Blood Witches. Mm-hmm. So, once again, Siege was firmly in effect. And again, just like my other game against Peace Scar, it was the same sort of like a scenario that I could stack Stormwall behind Boomhauers into the zone.
And give yourself a little bit of a screen there.
So, it just became a super grinder. I messed up my feat turn because I forgot to reload Siege, and I didn't kill either Deathjack or Seether, but I blew like... I took Deathjack down to like 2 hit points, which is awful.
So the reload would have got you there.
Yeah. I was shooting Rangers at him. I'm like, oh, fuck it. They're POW 11s. Maybe I'll just dice the last 2 points off him. Couldn't do it. Anyway, so basically that kind of sucked, but the Stormwall was just murdering everything, and he actually got a 1 good turn of hitting the Stormwall where he got like Gerlach on it and 3 or 4 Mechanithralls and like a couple Bane Knights, but you know with Arcane Shield, I mean he blew like about half of it off. He broke its arm, maybe it was more than half. It was like maybe like a 5/8 or something like that. But it was still alive, and there were still a handful of Boomhauers left. My Rangers were still doing some work. My Iris was doing work. And I was just grinding his infantry to fucking death. Yep. And the main tool is Ground Pounder. Ground Pounder, I was just... He had to congest so much in that zone.
To focus and stack up. Yeah. And then you just go, oh, thank you.
Yeah, like his Bane Knights, I'd kill some, they'd Vengeance forward charge something, kill some infantry.
And now they're in a little circle.
Yeah, so I would shoot Ground Pounder and get like 7 models on her. It happened a couple times. Ultimately... Oh, he had Soul Hunters as well on that list.
Okay.
Soul Hunters are fucking frightening, because... Incorporeal is a problem. I learned from my first game that if Ayana's bored, she should just throw magic weapons on Stormwall, so Soul Hunters can't just like fly past Stormwall and try to kill my caster.
And that's so awkward for me, or like not common, because I'm always running the Curlstone.
Yeah.
So anything I'm facing, like the Ghost Pirates or any of that, like
well, now
jankety
do they
stuff.
Do they lose Incorporeal for a round with this? Because this is specifically they gain Incorporeal when they activate.
I believe it's
Rage.
They cannot gain stealth. Like can't. Like you can never have it.
If they can't gain it, then or auto lose it, then it's an issue. I don't know. But yeah, it was a. You don't play against a ton of Incorporeal outside of Crix, and I hadn't played against Soul Hunters in a while, so they can be pretty good. But ultimately what ended up happening was we ground down a bunch, and I finally was like, okay, my Stormwall's got 3 focus on it, and I spent all these activations clearing out all the mooks in front of it. Like, everything I could possibly do, and there's 1 fucking mech thrall I could not kill, and I'm just, all right, I'm out of attacks now. Like, everything is activated other than Stormwall. I'm like, what am I going to do with this thing? My superstructure was broken, so no more pods. I was like, well, I could punch 1 Mechanithral, and I didn't really have the room to move around him and do much work because there was models pinning him in otherwise. A handful of other Mechanithral, stuff like that. So I was really sort of at a loss. At this point, his Deathjack was... I think Deathjack and Seether were both dead, maybe? So I said, fuck it. And I just trampled Stormwall. So gave up my initial, trampled, killed the killed the Mechanithral.
Mm-hmm.
Got in a range of Scar. Scar's sitting there. She had already feeded, so she was down 11 hit points or so. But she had a pretty big camp. And she's def 16. I was like, you know what? I'll just take a boosted swing at her. Yeah, so my last two focus, just one boosted attack. Hit her. Did like 7, I think, because she was pretty high armor at that point. Mm-hmm. I didn't roll super well on the 2-dice damage roll. So she was down to like 4 or 5 hit points. And then I was like, all right, cool, I'm done. So the rest of his army activates. They kill the Stormwall, which was fairly predictable. It only had like about 15 health
left
or something.
Yep.
Yeah, I pretty much knew it was going to die that turn. I was trying to get the most I could out of it.
Yep.
Ultimately, I kind of just flippantly was like, I guess I'll just punch Scar in the face. Kind of ended up being the right decision. He kills the Stormwall. He goes for Siege. Siege is sitting there on Arcane Shield in some big camp. And he only got one Soul Hunter to him who hit him over the wall and did a few points, and then his other attacks couldn't go over the wall because they don't have reach. And then he left him there. Next turn, Siege walks out of melee, camping a million. Doesn't take any damage because he's camping a million and he's super high armor.
Arcane Shield upkept, I take it?
What's that, sir?
Did you upkeep Arcane Shield on that?
Yeah.
Yep, so he's like ridiculous.
Yeah, here. Siege on full camp without a squire is like 26 with Arcane Shield.
So you're not scared at all.
No.
Yep.
It was like dice minus 13 on 3 dice. So I walk out, and then I forget to reload again. I'm like, son of a bitch.
That's like the fourth time,
but right? But I do manage to run. I ran a ranger up to get within line of sight on Scar, and that allowed me to shoot her at, she's a 16, and I was an 8, so I needed a boosted 8 to hit her. Hit her, did the last 5 points, that was that, or last 3 points, whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I was really, that game was getting really tight, because he, we hadn't scored any scenario points, but he had, at that point, more stuff in the zone. Once Stormwall went down, I was like, he's going to win on tiebreakers.
If it dice down happens.
Yeah, if I don't kill him. So I was, my excuse that game for not reloading, compared to the other one, was that I legitimately was in a hurry to kill him because I was super afraid of getting dice down. So I was like, move here, roll your free strike. He rolled it. I was like, cool, roll dice. You know, I just boost, just throwing dice across the table, like making it happen as quick as I could, and got him. So, but it was a really close game. It was one of the better games I played of the day. And that Siege list is pretty good against Crix. I mean, I hadn't played it a ton against Crix up to this point, but it
did its work.
Yeah, so far so good.
So, my round 4 game was against Merlin, the buddy Bill played earlier in the day in round 1. I saw Constance and E. Haley and was scared. not a fan of that matchup. So I ended up going with my Doomy list again, so I don't have to worry about infantry just massive dying. He went with E. Haley, which I kind of assumed. Was hoping I'd get Constance maybe, but... So, and I think, after the fact, me and Merlin kind of talked for a little while, and we, agreed that dice roll to see who goes first meant so much.
Yeah.
He ended up winning.
He had an Anastasia in there, right?
Yes, he did.
Haley with Anastasia, if it goes first.
I needed to get lucky to win the roll, of course, I didn't. He beat me. He went first, and boom, next thing you know, Stormwall's in the zone.
Yeah.
And, Nis and the dwarfs, he was running the... Hammer Dwarfs, they're up there, and it's like, holy crap.
Yep.
So now at this point, I'm thinking, okay, well, we can't get the zone yet, so I don't want to just throw everything in it and just hand him a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
So I kind of, back Doomy into a corner where, he was, almost perfectly in the kill box, right behind the wall, and, started bricking up there. And he went, then top of two, killed my Storm Troll, which he rolled some good dice, for sure. But killed him, wasn't too beat up about it. I'm like, that sucks. Oh, well. And then he feeds. And he wasn't sure if he wanted to feed, and he feeded, and it definitely was the right call for sure. And he even said after the game that he had to feed there. And it just got me in such a bind. Because now it's like, okay, he's going to start scoring, and do I just move these models into the zone and say, hey, kill Mulg, or hey, kill Earthborn and an Axer?
Right, or just give more scenario points.
I just was in such a, almost like tilting in a way. I want to put my hands up and go, how do I beat this?
Yeah.
It's just a really rough matchup, especially moving my models around and
Well, and you unfortunately you can't like you have to commit hard to the scenario against her, and even when it's like, cool, I'm putting my entire army into your army's
threat. Why I feel like going first would be so much different, because if I can first, sure. I'm in that zone now. I'm planted and got that footprint in there.
Yeah,
it's just much different.
No, absolutely. It's
rough. So I kind of just hope to stay there, and I saw Anastasia way off in the distance, and I knew it was coming. So I tried to, like, back myself up, make sure she couldn't, like, get to me and all that stuff. And he goes next turn. You know, he's starting to dominate my zone, kill the objective, all that good stuff. So he's flying up the, you know, he's got 3 points now at the end of this turn. But he TKs Anastasia up, which didn't see coming, and I was like, oh, shit. Now, I don't know how much I could have done about it because I was backed into a corner and he feeded on me and all that good stuff. But it was definitely a really nice play. And, I you know, and then soon after that, I had to go for a jankety assassination, Mulg trampling on a feet, turn goading, and was about a half inch out, or else I would have got 2 attacks on Haley. So, I mean, I almost had a chance.
Yeah.
But it was, I had, you know, try to luck my, sack my way out, you know, and he definitely outplayed me, for sure. The list matchup didn't favor me at all. He got some good dice, too. With Anastasia moving up and doing her thing, his dwarfs were dice minus, like, 11 on my beasts, all armored up, and he was doing 3 or 4 every one of them.
Magical Merlin.
But, you know, I don't want to sit here and say, like, oh, he diced me, because it wasn't that at all. He definitely outplayed me. And
the epic Haley went first in a live scenario play. It's pretty much like, well, you know, I mean, you're giving up some number of scenario points.
I'm expecting, like, hey, I have to get lucky. So then it's like, you know, everything was landsliding. And I'm just like, oh, this is just like, you know, I'm falling apart at the seams. And,
she's a hoe bag.
Yeah, he took me down and mad credit to him.
She's a hoe bag.
So now we're into our last round.
All right, round 5. So I draw Edeni again. This is the same dude, Colin, that Brian played. So obviously I ran the same plan. I ran Maelok. This was not as live a scenario, I don't think. It was outflank. And I don't remember the scenario even being on my radar during the game. There was no way he was putting Denny on that flag to dominate it. And that zone's too big for him to clear out completely.
Yeah, and he has to kill your flag because you can't dominate until it's... Your objective has to die.
No, there's no objectives. In this. No.
I'm thinking of last scenario. My bad. Yep. You're right.
So, he points out to me at the beginning of the game, he holds up this white token and says, this token means she's in corp, which is awesome. I'm glad that we're not going to have an argument later about whether she's in corp or not.
Yeah, because that people forget.
It's on the field. It's set and stuff.
People are like, I meant to incorp or whatever.
Yeah, because it's in the control phase.
Yeah, that's shitty. Because you got to do that. You got to make that decision during your control.
Yep.
So cool. Long story short, I do exactly the same thing I did against Ray. Tune up one unit of them and push them way forward. They're high armor. They're my my brick. And what are you looking for? Yeah, that's all yours. So, I shove these undead gators up the field as far as I can to sort of just take the brunt of his attack while Denny is just being Denny. She's in corp for a turn where I can't do anything to her. You know, he feats at the predictable time, but what he didn't do during his feat turn is go in corp, which I was watching for, and I was worried that argument was going to come up, but it didn't, thankfully. And, on the turn that he incorped me, I was able to shoot him with my turtle.
The turtle.
It's POW 14. It's pretty legit against a naked Denny, which she was totally butt-ass 14? Naked.
I thought it was 13 for some reason.
Maybe it's POW 13. I think it's 14, but either way. It's like it's almost like straight dice on her when she's naked.
Yeah.
So I boosted damage. I did, I think, 7 to her, so she's got 10 left, 9 left.
Yeah, something like that.
All my guys can't move, obviously. So Maelok drops 2 gators with, you know, respawn.
Yep.
And feats. And they incorp charge and buried her. I had to roll pretty hot. I think I needed 9s to hit her because she's not living. I can't re-roll them. So
You're dropping posse, right?
Yeah, she's undead. Yeah.
So, yeah, she's undead.
But you're getting 4 attacks.
Yeah, 4 attacks would I need 9s. Yeah. And then I got to do some legit damage with POW 13s against an arm.
Well, she's on 14
or 15.
So you need probably...
But I still... It's more. I got to roll 9.
If you get a charge to hit, it's
the charge. No, neither of the charges hit. I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think I hit with both not charge attacks.
Okay.
But I still had to roll 2 9s out of 4 attacks, yeah. And I managed to do that. So yeah, I definitely lucked out a little bit on that one.
Yeah, it's definitely above average.
But I felt like if I let that game keep going in attrition, I was going to lose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's probably like a good call to recognize that. They always talk about like finding it before you get too far down.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew she was going to be in corp next turn.
Yeah.
Because he then forgot you have this no turn. Chance.
Yep.
Yeah, so then I'm in deep shit. So that was it.
So my round 5 was against Jake Hickok. Is he a Lansing guy?
He's a Lansing guy who's playing for RAW.
Yeah, he plays out at Evo, I think, too, as well, right?
Yeah.
Good player. I never actually played him before. I know you guys have played him in a couple tournaments. I've played in tournaments where he's been there, but never had the chance to play him. He was playing Signar. He was playing Kane 2 and Haley 2. And I dropped Siege. He ended up dropping Haley 2. And the scenario was whatever the hell we just talked about. What was the name of that scenario? Any idea?
It was outflank, right?
Yeah.
Circle and flag?
Yep, that's it.
Yep, it's outflank.
So he went first because he had Anastasia, and that pretty much borderline guarantees it. And he deployed Haley really far to my right, which is like the zone side right.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 6 inches from the table edge on that flank.
Wow, that's really far out.
Well, I hadn't deployed yet, and I think he felt like Siege could kill her pretty easily if I, you know, got to grips with her. So I think he was being pretty cautious of the threat of the Siege assassination. And her, you know, patrol area is like a million inches. But what it did allow me to do is I lined Siege up on the flag and was able to sort of angle my army away from her and try to attempt to minimize the feed. So I threw the Boomhauers in the zone, Stormwall behind the Boomhauers, Rangers and Siege and everything else went left at the flag. He ended up coming in, and I was... My first turn was basically a siege run at the flag, but I made sure I didn't move within the 16 or so inches of the edge that allows Anastasia to come in and get off an espionage.
So was your goal here to start dominating the flag?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He did not commit hard on that side. There was like Forge Guard on the other side that were kind of in the middle, and there was like an Iris in the forest and a Black 13th in front of me, and Siege can kill that shit pretty easily with Ground Pounder and, you know, Ranger bonus and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's not guaranteed, but he's got some
play. It's ideal.
Yeah, I mean, he's got some play against Stealth Solos and High Def and all that stuff, so, and he ignores Concealment and, you know, whatever. But, and that's kind of how it went down. He pretty much realized that if he could clear the Boomhauers out of the zone, that he could score, or force me to put the Stormwall in. So his turn one, he comes up, aggressively kills a bunch of Boomhauers with Gun Mages and Stormwall and whatnot and feats on me. My turn, I had the option of... He only caught my Stormwall and my Boomhauers in the feet. He did not catch my caster or any of that other stuff. Our casters, though, are, like, really far apart right now.
Yeah, opposite sides of the table kind of thing.
And he also... this Anastasia can come in on turn two, right?
Usually anything with ambush can come in turn two.
Okay, so this is actually, we're talking about turn two now. He moved up, I moved up, he feeded on me and started clearing Boomhauers. Anastasia came in, and she was short, and tried to kill like a Stormsmith and missed, so basically didn't do anything.
Okay.
I ended up, and he really thinned out the Boomhauers pretty bad. I had like 4 left at the end of the turn. So on my turn, I was like, well, I'm feeded on, Stormwall can't really do anything. He also potted my Iris dead, which was a really good move, because fucking 9-inch walk on Stormwall and a 10-inch pod. Like, I just moved her. I had her, like, an inch too close, basically.
Yep.
Mm. But, yeah, that was pretty nice. Temporal acceleration and bond and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So my big choice here was, do I put Stormwall in the zone and face tank his Stormwall for a turn, or do I try to just jam Boomhauers in the way, in the path, and move my Stormwall out of the zone?
It's that whole giving a piece up versus scenario.
Yeah, it's,
you know, kind of like where I was last round too.
Right. It was like, do I think Boomhauers can handle the amount of attacks he has? And I decided to move Stormwall out because I didn't want him to get charged. Well, pretty much the worst shit happened. He killed all the Boomhauers. My tough rolls weren't great. His dice rolls were pretty good. I probably should have had Arcane Shield on them. I had it on the Stormwall for the whole game instead. The Arcane Shield would have really helped because the Gun Mages wouldn't have done basically
as much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he clears out all the models and the pod that I dropped in the middle, you know, just as like, here's another model you have to kill. And he gets on my Stormwall. Doesn't do a tremendous amount of damage. Does like 20-something boxes, though. Next turn, I clear the flag, kill Iris, kill some other shit. And I feat, and I blow up almost all the Forge Guard. There's like three left at the end of the turn. And my Stormwall just punches the shit out of his. I took it down to like 15 health. Because my first hit was at like... His first punch, I think, did like 20 damage.
Okay.
And then, you know, four more punches, and I rolled pretty well. So, and I had moved my Stormwall in the zone at this point. So he had scored a scenario point, and I was on, I believe, at the end of this turn, I was at two, because I had dominated the flag twice.
Yeah. Okay.
But I had to put Stormwall in to knock, you know. So he ends up, so basically here's the game, right? He moves up with his Stormwall, or, you know, adjusts his Stormwall, which has a broken system at this point, or broken arm and no pod. And, trying to think of the order he did it in. Ragman walked up and rusted me. So took me down to from 22.
Ragman?
Sorry, not Ragman.
Gorman. Okay.
Then Ragman walked up and laid Darkshroud down.
Gotcha.
And this was probably my biggest failing in this game, was not trying to remove both of those guys.
You left them both up.
I removed a ton of Forge Guard with a Ground Pounder, and I probably should have went for one of them. The other thing that happened, the reason my Stormwall was so successful punching his, was he had moved his Journeyman up a little bit too far, and I just clipped him with the feet, and then Holt just went bang with one POW 12 and offed him.
Yep.
Had that not happened, all that damage wouldn't have happened to his Stormwall. So there's a couple little misplays there, but it was otherwise a really tight, closely contested game. His Stormwall came in, now my Stormwall's armor 18, and manages to off me. Does like 45 points or so of damage he needs to kill me, or 40 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then he dominates. So now it's 4-2, or 3-2. I have nothing to put in the zone, because my Rangers have double-failed command checks, and I don't have any souls to run in there, pretty much. I'm fucked. Like, I mean, I could throw a soul in there, and he's just going to kill it.
Yeah.
So he had kind of walled... Haley's empty, though. She'd spent all her resources doing this. Walled a bunch of gun mages in front of her. I was like, all right.
Foxhole, hope to kill.
I Arcane Shield Siege. I reload with Reinhold. I walk out of melee with a couple Forge Guard, taking free strikes from Forge Guard and just laughing them off because I'm armor 27. I took like 2 points of damage or something.
Don't they
like
have crit smite too?
They might.
I'm pretty
sure. No, they do. They do, because Merlin crit smite
my ball. Dangerous. I assume he forgot about it, or he just didn't crit and then didn't tell me. I didn't even realize, but I didn't have a choice. So I walk out. I get just out of melee range. I foxhole all the gun mages out front. Problem is, my Rangers failed two command checks in a row, so one of them easily could have ran 14 and then gotten damage on the site to her and made this like a legit assassination, but instead it was hit two boosted 10s to kill her. So I missed the first boosted 10, hit the second, did like 12, because Siege's gun is like POW 14 and she was empty, but I needed like a giant dice spike to kill her on that second shot, so it didn't happen, and that was that. But probably the best game I played of the day, like the most tactically clean, and like there were, like I said, a couple minor misplays, but it was a top table looking game throughout. I mean, it was we both understood the threat of each other's armies. We both were sort of kind of yo-yoing our casters around right at that sort of, like, there was like a bar of distance that never really changed until that last turn where he had to come in and I had to try to kill him. But definitely the best game, and probably the cleanest game of the tournament by far, actually, now that I think about it. Hickok played a super clean game, so I really like that.
All right, my round five, I played Aaron, playing Menoth.
Aaron who? Solon?
Yeah. I don't know how to say his last name.
Another Lansing dude.
And he was playing for his theoretical game store that he's about to open called Hollow Mountain Games or something like that.
I think that's it.
Hollow Mountain. I don't know.
It's Hollow something.
Yeah, Aaron's a cool guy. So whenever his store opens, people should go buy things from him.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I can't remember a second list. I know his first list was P. Krios. I had played my Doomy list a few times that day, and I was actually going into the tournament thinking I'd play more Madric. I feel like that was the list I was more comfortable with, so that's why I ran. He dropped P. Krios. His list was Judicator, Bastions, I think it was a Redeemer, and some other little odds and ends.
So a shitload of AoE.
He had a Reckoner, too. Yeah, tons and tons of AoEs.
or, you know, guns that are inaccurate, but it doesn't matter because...
Annan Holt.
Right.
I think I went first in this game, ran some shit up. Nothing that big, you know, put Tail missed on my Fenblades, hoping they'd survive, and he had some real nice deviations and just decimated most of my Fenblades. I think at the end of that turn, I had like one, two left.
It was kind of what that list does. Is just
it was just
kill
like
armor infantry. Yeah,
it was just bad.
What if Fenblades 14 base?
Yeah, 16 with a stone. I mean, I'm not making tough. I didn't make tough checks. I made like, you know, 1 out of 10 or something. It just wasn't good. He's picking stuff off.
Nice.
So it was a little depressing, but you know, oh well, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. And next turn, I was able to get my burrowers that popped up on his bastions, which kind of evened it out. You know, Blood Fury burrowers basically took them all out and left one at like 3 health.
Wow, nice.
It was. I mean, they were dewarded. I needed the hit with my guns, and I ended up doing that. Most of the charges didn't do much, but I hit when I needed to, I guess. Kind of just moved everything up positioning, knowing that Judicator's probably going to get closer, same with that Reckoner. I tied up the Reckoner with a couple Fenblades, just the last two. Like, hey, run, just, you know, that would at least deal with this and not get on my champions. Tail misted them. Just kind of positioned, you know, waiting to try to, like, outlast it and close in with the rest of my guys. He feeded this turn, knocked everything down. I think the one thing that he failed to realize is now my champions have feigned death, so he can't target them, any of them, because he just feed and knocked them all down. He can't target them with his Judicator or Reckoner or nothing.
Oh, yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, so he's like, oh, I'll shoot him. Like, no, you can't. Nope. I mean, it wasn't as bad, but I feel like he probably could have done a little more damage to them.
Sure.
Yeah. Because he still had deviations deviating back on them and stuff like that, so it wasn't nearly as bad.
And all those guns are like rat one, but that doesn't matter when your whole army's knocked down pretty much.
Yeah.
So.
So instead, he kind of like he killed basically all the burrowers at like one, I think. Like he just said, okay, we're gonna, you know, remove those, kill the Fenblades. That was about it. The one I feel like thing he overlooked too was he didn't kill the Fellcaller, which I feel like that's like the first thing you need to do after you knock down my whole army.
Yeah.
Left him up. So first thing I did, you know, activated him, stood up my entire army pretty much.
Right.
At that point, Blood Fury the champs, they rushed in and 3 of them wrecked the Judicator.
Ugh.
That's just kind of be a theme.
That's what I was going to say as a joke, and then you got to the part in your battle report where it happened.
Hey, you know what? It does work.
Yeah, your special Blood Fury dice.
Yeah.
Blood Fury, multiple attacks, weapon masters. It's all right, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, if I really do bad on dice, I can always feat, you know? So,
yeah,
gotta cover myself.
Here's 3 more attacks.
So, I tell you the Judicator, which I don't think he was expecting at all. I think it was one of those things where he expected, like, hey, you might rough it up, but not, you know? And I did roll really hot. You know, when you're even dice, like, -7 or -8, and I roll 3 sixes, and, you know,
that's
5
what
or something.
List does. It's just, like, whatever's left, whatever handful of infantry is left, gets Blood Fury and just kills, like, every half.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So at this point, we're kind
of
positioning. Like, at some point, I kind of forget now, but I ran over and dominated the one flag. I had an opportunity, and I'm like, I knew it was getting late. I got 1 point kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point, though, he was able eventually to get his Reckoner on my bomber. Mm-hmm. Didn't do nearly enough that he wanted to. Bomber then ended up breaking his Cortex next turn. So right now, at this point, we have just, like, my bomber, his Reckoner, on the Judicator's wreck, just chilling there.
Right.
All my champs were dead, just from the Reckoner and Krios, and just, you know, last couple died. And then I have Mandrake and an Impaler. So I pretty much have just 2 beasts and, like, nothing at this point. And he has his caster, a Reckoner. He had his Redeemer, and then, like, a couple Choir and, like, a Vassal or something. Nothing major. That's why I was trying to get the scenario points. I knew Dice Down might have been coming.
Yeah, yeah.
So at this point, he kills my Bomber. I'm left with basically Mandrake and an Impaler, and he dominates the zone. So now he's up in the scenario 2-1. Because he ran, like, a Redeemer or something to contest Mandrake.
Right, right.
So I kind of realized, like, I gotta, like, try to kill him. Or, like, kill his Reckoner and then try to kill him, too. I didn't really know.
Yeah.
So I decided that, with Awe and stuff, I probably should have killed Krios, Camping Zero. Instead, I charged his Reckoner with Awe and all that. Killed the Reckoner.
With Awe?
Yeah, you just keep saying Awe.
What are you talking about?
Not...
Ashenvale.
Sorry, that's what it is.
Oh,
my
okay.
Mistake.
So you're saying
my
that you'd be minus two. So
-2. I mean, Mandrake's
is effectively, what, a 16?
Yeah, I need 8s. I mean,
right.
At that point in the game, I probably should have.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't have any camp, I mean,
No,
I just two shot him with Madrak, I would
but,
say.
But so I charged his Reckoner, rolled triple ones for damage, which kind of sucked. Bought like two attacks, killed the Reckoner, and then I think, okay, now I just felt like at that point, then there's not much that can kill me then. So right. If I get to go again, I you know I'll win.
So you were kind of thinking weather the assassination next turn and then kill him.
Exactly, and I had two Fury left. I could have bought attacks on Krios, right. But I was like that whole, I have an Impaler to transfer. He probably can't kill both.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I'll camp the two. And at this point, I had my Impaler still up, and I'm like, well, what the hell? Let's just charge Krios, because he's got nothing better to do.
Yeah, sure.
And boost hit, and roll, like, bonkers for damage, and bring him down to 3 health. So at this point, I'm going, oh, great. You know, I didn't know I was going to spike dice, but I should have bought attacks.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like a situation where, and I've done this myself, where you're a little concerned that the game's going to end quick, and you kind of, your brain just starts playing tricks on you with dice math. Like, you just say to me, like, in a room here, you know, with, I have all the time in the world to think about
exactly.
This.
Exactly. No, and that's,
like, yeah, he's a 14, 16 caster with no camp and, like, 17 or 16 mm-hmm. hitboxes.
Yeah.
And you've got Madrak and an Impaler.
It should have been a good game.
Yeah.
I know. I agree.
Exploded.
And,
right?
Like, looking back now, I'm like, why did I not? You know, but right. I think that was the whole, like, trying to be conservative, not wanting to overextend kind of thingy.
Right.
And just not really doing the math in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, again, especially when you know dice down is coming, you're moving quicker.
You were under two time pressures. You're under the time turn pressure, which is probably not that bad since you didn't have that many models, but you're also under the pressure of knowing that the game is just going to arbitrarily end at some point and having to do something. So maybe you don't sit there and think for a minute, what's the math of this assassination?
So he goes then on his turn. He's kind of like thinking, and he's positioning models in the zone, trying to box things in.
Yeah.
And doesn't know if he wants to try to take a free strike and kill my Impaler or something, and then be like, hi, dominate the zone.
Yeah,
you have to kill me next turn, now I have these models in the way.
Right.
Or just trying to melee me down. I had two transfers or something.
The answer's
so while he's moving there. Stuff around and kind of, you know, pondering his turn, dice down gets called, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, I'm like, ugh. Like, because I know, you know, at that point it's frustrating because one more turn, I feel like there's no way I don't win. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, you know, in retrospect, like you said, you had the opportunity.
I had the chance. I had the chance.
And that's in time turns, especially towards the end of games. I had a game, my I think it was my third round against the Krix player, where it's kind of the same boat. Like, I knew if Dice Down got called, I lost. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, holy fuck, if I don't kill him ASAP.
Yeah.
You know, and...
No, I agree.
But I think that's sort of the boat you were
and,
in.
And it's a hard situation, because, you know, I don't want him to rush... But I want him to rush because I want to go.
Yeah, sure.
On his turn, you know. And it's a weird situation because, you know, when you play games up at the shop, you don't play dice down ever. Mm. So when you get in that tournament, it's kind of like a foreign thing sometimes that you're not really
used to.
Well,
that's what I was saying. Like, the more tournaments you play in, the more time turn tournaments, which is the majority of them, of course, because death clocks are expensive, basically. But the more of those you play in, you'll start doing that thing where, like, your opponent's turn is winding down and you just turret your head around and like how many people are playing.
I did that like, a few times.
If it's like two or three games left or less, I'm usually, oh fuck, this is going to end in like,
yep.
I'm going to just pretend this is going to end at the end of my turn. What am I going to do? So,
yep.
And that comes with just like some experience. So, you know, you'll know next time, like just commit hard to it. And,
yep. No, exactly. And then, but, finished 3-2. Pretty happy with the way I played.
Yeah, same here. So
play good people all day, you know.
Yeah, man. I was really happy with the guys I played with and the camaraderie. And like, it was obviously everybody was there to compete, but there was, you know, it was a pretty sportsman.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have one game all day where I was like, you know, oh, I don't want to deal with this guy or something like that.
No, me neither.
Close to that.
So you went up 4-1, Bill.
Yep.
3-2.
You and I were 3-2.
Yep.
And then I want to
say
there
took sixth two other three overall.
Teams. Yeah,
I took seventh.
I took ninth, which is out of the points.
It's all right. It's all right.
And RIW ended up winning it. And BC got second. And the main reason for that was that Merlin got second overall in the tournament as well. And I think one of their other guys was in the top eight. I'm not sure who though. Do you know
another BC guy? I'm not sure.
Did Aaron play for BC?
No,
that
he
tournament?
Played for his own store.
Did he?
Okay.
Then, yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so, but I think, and I don't want to do the math here in the podcast, but I'm just wondering, had I rolled two Boosted 10s in a row and killed Haley,
how would it have skewed the ranking?
Well, with my strength of schedule, I think I end up fourth then.
Well, see, but that I was doing the same thing after. I'm like, if I beat Aaron,
right, yeah,
now I'm fourth.
So basically,
for sure.
If
so,
we didn't shit the bed in our last two games, we had a really good shot at it.
Yeah, good job, assholes.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I tried.
And then also, there's another funny in that last round. Jay was playing Chuck. Right, it was the last round.
Yeah.
And he had Chuck down to like his caster, and Jay had like
it was Scar and a Stalker.
Yeah, and Jay and Chuck had or Jay had like 35 points of his army left.
Yep.
And then Chuck somehow pulls out a bullshit, you know, backlash assassination on the last focus spent.
Yeah.
Right. He just like went and bought, he like charged the Lancer and then was like doing just enough to the Lancer to proc feedback, but not enough to like kill it outright.
Yep.
And he bought like, you know, however, because you know Scar usually has a bunch of focus.
He ran her out and then Stalker came over and hit, and on his very last attack, did the last point of damage to Haley.
Yep.
Managed to kill Haley completely down without killing that fucking Lancer.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, do like 12 points to Haley or whatever she was at. It was a lot, though.
It's tough to do 12 points of backlash off the same Jack, because usually whatever you're hitting it with is...
For a few,
I mean, if it's Colossal, that's one thing, but Lancer...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're pretty tough, too. I'm amazed, like, some of those attacks didn't just bounce off.
Well, a couple did.
Yeah, I'm just... Let me rephrase that. Enough that it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But...
It was
had that went down,
heartbreaking to watch that happen to Jay. When Jay is, like, biting his lip, he's like, you're finally gonna fucking beat Chuck in a tournament. Yeah. He's super pumped. I'm high-fiving him. Like, get this fucker!
Nope.
And Chuck steals it like an asshole.
No, Chuck dream crushed all day. That was his deal. So.
Yep.
But, and I think he ended up 4-1 and in, like, third overall. So RIW had first, third, fourth, so they super clinched first.
Yep, for sure.
But had that last round, basically, had those three games not gone down to like super, you know, coin flip situations in all three that we just talked about, maybe something different would have happened. But
you can always say the what ifs.
I was
of
super
course,
proud of everybody, and I was like, I don't know, I was just, afterwards, I felt really happy for everybody. We went out to eat afterwards and just chit-chatted a bit about the tournament, and everybody acquitted themselves well, and I don't know, it was a good time, and
it's also really cool for me. Like, we've talked about Jarek and had him on other podcasts, but like, I feel like, you know, I started playing and he was a little bit after me, but still in that like new bracket and how far we've come, you know, in relation to you two, you know,
there's just there's a bunch of players of pretty much equal skill at this shop now. Like, there's not anybody who's like just drastically better or worse than anybody else, I don't think.
And,
I mean, let me rephrase that. There's some guys who are still like kind of relatively new, obviously, but of the sort of core players who've been playing now.
Credit that you guys do is just cleaning up play, like measurements, declaring stuff.
Yeah.
And it really helps people, you know, because at the point in the game, you want to be like, you know, but then you realize, especially in tournament stuff, like how much better of a player that makes you.
Well, and you know, and your games become tighter on both sides because you start being able to police your opponents effectively. Like, I remember when I first started playing, I'd be like, that didn't seem like a clean measurement. But he did it really fast. I don't know.
Yeah.
And now it's very easy for me to be like, I can kind of see it coming, especially you watch the, you know, you could kind of tell, like, for guy's first turn, he's running all his models, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, man, those moved like 2 inches too far. You're like, all right, I'm on alert now. What's going on? And then you start, you look at a model, and you're like, if he's going to charge here, that's going to be kind of contested. And you see the guy reaching for the model, you say, hold on a sec, pause it, break out your lit go. I used to never do that because I didn't have the confidence and I didn't necessarily know the threat ranges of everything. So it comes with some experience.
Yeah, for sure.
I also think just, and Muse has said this a bunch of times, like playing in a tournament, especially a 5-round tournament like that, that's like a compacted day of like your brain just being on like, your brain's a sponge the whole fucking day because you're just in war machine mode. It's not like fucking around broing out here today, like not really paying attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're on point mentally for 5 rounds.
You're supposed to be on point mentally.
Right. Theoretically, you're on point mentally, and you end up learning way more in that day than you'd learn in like 3 months of playing games here.
Oh, agreed. Absolutely.
Especially because you see stuff that you're not, you know. Bill now knows what Constance Blaze does, for example.
Yeah. Yo.
So. Yep, super awesome time. Congrats to Bill and
Bill McKibben.
Yep,
and Mike O.
To Bill McKibben and Mike O.
And Cliff, who ran it.
Yep. Cliff runs tight shit, man. That's the second tournament we played in of his. They're both really great. And great venue, awesome glass etched trophy that says Michigan Cup, and it's got like a War Machine Hordes logo on it.
It was
cool. Gears. Yeah, it's the whole thing was just classy and upscale.
It was nicely done. Yeah. It wasn't cheap and cheesy kind of thing.
It didn't feel cheap at all. It felt like the premier War Machine event in Michigan, which is how they build it. And a lot of people were like, "Boo, I don't know about that." And it totally lived up to it. Yeah. I'm just hoping the next one they do, which is going to be probably a springtime one. It's going to be like a spring fall deal, I guess. Either the venue will be bigger, like they'll probably move it to like rent a separate venue, and we can do like a 64 player and maybe get some out of state guys and make it more like our Rust Belt Midwest kind of area. You know, mm-hmm. some Ohio guys, some Canada guys, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whoever wants to show. So
yeah.
Anybody else have anything else to add as far as Michigan Cup or?
I think you put a cherry on that Sunday, buddy.
Cool. I think we should call it. We've talked a lot. This podcast has been cobbled together out of separate recordings, and we're excited to shoot it out to you guys.
Yep. It's going to be a long one.
Yeah, if you're at this point, you know how long it is.
Yeah.
So, cool.
All right. Roll credits.
War